You ready for Alan?
It worked.
It worked.
Yep. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 12, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our participant code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 through 15. That's Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 through 15. And when he, the Lord Jesus, had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of diseases. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the publican, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Levius, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles and into the city of the Samaritans, enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the leper, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor brass in your purse, nor scrip for your journey, neither two coats, neither shoes, nor yet staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. And unto whatever city or town ye shall enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide until you go thence. And when you come into a house, salute it. And if the house be worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it not be worthy, let your peace return to you. And whosoever shall not receive you nor hear your words, when ye depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. Truly I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 through 15. Okay, tonight I just want to cover a few things that we're doing. We've spoke about this over the past couple of weeks, and maybe anybody that has any questions on this should... Well, let me open up the... let me turn from lecture to Q&A. Now, I don't want anyone to get into the Q&A yet. But anybody who has a question concerning our non-judicial foreclosures or affidavits that we're now taking for our court case, you want to get into the Q&A, just hit star 6. So we want the first individuals into the Q&A, those who are interested to have some questions concerning the non-judicial foreclosures, also the affidavits that we're starting to take, which we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So let's give those people a couple of minutes if anybody has any questions on that, and then anybody can get into the Q&A. I might as well talk a little bit about that right now, the non-judicial foreclosures. We filed the first group of non-judicial foreclosures. I think it was 6 of them. I think we got 3 or 4 coming up more. I think there are more behind that also, but I think 3 or 4 are getting ready to come through the system. I'm not sure. I know April was ill. She's been sort of out for a couple of days, and hopefully she's doing well now, and she'll be back maybe in the next few days. We are taking anybody has wants to fill out a form to file in our court case concerning their non-judicial foreclosure, and that could be on a tax or a mortgage. Non-judicial foreclosure, or any foreclosure taking place by mortgage companies or tax foreclosures, they always do it non-judicial. They try to make it look like it's going through the courts because they file it through the courts, but there's no hearing. There's usually, in most places, there's no judge even applied to the case. It's just a process that flows through the court, and paperwork flows back and forth, and then they do this dirty deed for the mortgage companies and also for the county to steal people's property for taxes. The whole process is illegal, unconstitutional, and can't stand up in a court of justice. So anybody who's going through this or has gone through this, if you've lost your house, even if it's years ago, you know, if you've lost your home through a tax foreclosure or you lost your home through a non-judicial foreclosure for the mortgage companies, as long as you have the basic information on all that that paperwork on that situation, we need certain information like if there was a judge assigned, usually there isn't, but if there was, or we would need, of course we need the court that it was filed in, and some other information. But anyway, you can click on non-judicial foreclosure on the right-hand side of our website. You'll find it on the right side. You'll also find it on the front page of our website. If you just right before the welcome, if you just come down right before the welcome message, there's two links that we put in there. One says tax and mortgage foreclosure help. Click here. So you click that and you can get some information and fill out a form, and we'll work with you to get your case into our case. If your unalienable rights have been denied and or you have been mistreated in prison, we have another click here to add your affidavit to our case. So a lot of people have been persecuted and they've used statutes to convict people, statutes and that would not stand up under common law. And so if you have that kind of a problem, you know, we might be able to help you with that also. If there's someone in prison that someone would want to do an affidavit for them, they could do it under what's called the next friend. And you can get more information by clicking that button. You'll get an affidavit, a page that gives all the information on how to write an affidavit and also some instructions and an email address to send that affidavit to. Just follow the instructions very, specifically and clearly. You know, a lot of people, I guess, don't read through the whole thing and then they make errors. So please read through that carefully and follow the instructions. Before you get your affidavit signed before a notary, you want to email it in to affidavits. I think that's it. affidavits@nationallibertyalliance.org. And someone will take a look at that and assist in any corrections or help that you might need on your affidavit. So anyway, if you'd like to include your affidavit in our case, you could do so. As we mentioned last week, the governor of New York and both houses here in New York have defaulted on the gun Second Amendment paper that we filed up here in Albany, New York. It's in the Northern District, Federal District of New York. And so we filed a paper concerning the Second Amendment, and they defaulted. They did not answer. So we filed the default papers. We got all the papers together. I didn't mail them out, but they are going out tomorrow morning. We did get out all of the non-judicial foreclosures that have been completed, and anybody who has fulfilled all the necessary information and got us the affidavit and so on, we've mailed them out. I think there are six of them. They have been posted up on our page. If you go to highlight grand jury in the top right and come down and click on non-judicial. No, that's not. That's the wrong one. I'm sorry. Click on docket. If you click on docket, you'll find a list of non-judicial foreclosures. We did it as show causes to the judge and also to the CEO or the president of the mortgage company, whoever that might be. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 six papers that we have filed. So if anyone is curious to know if their papers were filed, you'll find it up here. If your name is not up here, I know there are a couple going through the process. You should definitely make a call or send an email to the individuals that you've been communicating to on intake at nationallibertyalliance.org to find out maybe there's something missing. Maybe your affidavit has not been completed or something. I don't know. But find out what it is that might be missing, and we'll get your papers done this week if you get them taken care of in the next 24 hours. Okay, let's see. You know, we continue to organize across the nation. We continue to build up membership. We count on people being active. We are a pretty active group. We'd like to get more people active than are active. It's important that people, you know, take our courses, come to the Monday night meetings that we have here for 3 hours every Monday. If you can't stay the whole time, that's fine. There also, you can download the MP3s for the meeting, open forum, and listen to them during the week. You know, there's always something to learn. Anybody has any questions? And again, you can email questions into questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. So we do continue to organize across the nation, and we're continuing to build committees of safety. So anybody who's not involved in a committee of safety should click on the COS on the blue line and get involved. Get a committee of safety going in your county. We have a list of all of the committees of safeties across the nation, whatever state and counties that have been listed. So if there already is one going, you might want to join up with that group. And if there isn't one there, you might want to get together with a couple of people and start one within your county. It's extremely important that the people organize on the grassroots level. This is where real power and real authority is at. If you belong to a liberty group, and most of us do, and you're somewhat active there or very active there, you'll notice that there's really not much you can do. I mean, it is good to belong to the Liberty Group, and it does get the word out, and you can build more membership and also get more people aware of what is happening through these Liberty Groups. But generally speaking, when you go to the county or to the towns or to anybody, the elected individuals, you know, they don't really do much for you or respond very well. Of course, they want your vote, but they don't really do anything for us. If you go to the town meetings, you'll find that you don't really get anywhere often. I mean, some people have been successful. Don't get me wrong. It's rare. People who are very well organized and understand the process and maybe have some friends or connections in the local politics that they're able to get a voice. Or maybe just the people are reasonable and are willing to listen to the people. Which that is rare, but it does exist. But the committees of safeties are created for the sole purpose of communicating to these people and empowering yourselves and the local people through the grassroots and to get things done, and also to bring safety into your county. Ultimately, the purpose of the committee of safety is to empower the sheriff and to make sure that all local elected individuals understand that and also turn to the sheriff for security and any lawful needs for the county during an emergency. The sheriff is the one, not the federal government, not any federal agency. They answer to the sheriff, and the sheriff needs to understand he has the authority to use those services from the federal government, but don't let them take control. And if the sheriff feels that they are abusing their power, he can kick the federal government out. But it's up to the sheriff to maintain security and protect the county. And people need to understand this. Clearly, a sheriff needs to understand this. And also all the local elected individuals, officials, need to understand this. We don't want chaos during a time of chaos. We want order, law and order, and that's the way you'll get it. So please get involved with committees of safety. So we will continue doing that. And, of course, the main purpose of National Liberty Alliance is building grand jury administrations. We've got right now 1,003 administrators who have signed up. You can sign up when you take our free course. There's a place where you can check a box to sign up as an administrator. In order to become an administrator, which is a paid position, or will be a paid position, shall I say, once we bring common law back into the courts. But in any event, it's a professional job, paid position, We're looking for four individuals for every single county. We got 3,133 counties last count. I know while we were saying 3,134, these counties, sometimes counties come into being, come back out of being. Sometimes they're consolidated here or there, especially in the rural areas, specific, like Alaska or a lot of places out west or even up in the on the northeast. But in any event, right now there are 3,133 counties. We need four administrators for each one of those counties, so we still need a lot of people. If the positions are filled in your county, you can work in the county next door. You don't have to necessarily work in the county that you live in. So it's an employed position, pays well, but you need to get educated. We require everyone to take the two courses that we have here at National Liberty Alliance. They're free courses. Just have to be a member and sign up for the course and take it. It's recorded. We have the recording of everyone and what their status is, where how far they've advanced, or if they've completed the course, and so on. So we have a documentation of the courses as they're being taken by the individuals. So we know who's taken them and who's not taken them. We know who's taken them and kind of stalled out. Hopefully those who are stalled out on it will get active again and finish up these courses. But there will be no really good professional wage for this job for anyone who has not taken these courses. Of course, at the time when we take on these positions and fill these positions, if there are people that have not taken the courses, you know, they'll be on the job training like all of us anyway, but they will be required to take courses in order to get a decent salary. You know, the salary would be bare minimum if courses have not been taken. We also are in the process of writing a book, a handbook leads people on the things that they need to do, trains them on those things, and also gives them a lot of information on what might come up for these administrators in order to do their duty. And there is a vow that's required to be taken. That vow is to God, but it's in written paper. We're looking for people to, you know, fill out the form and sign before a notary and send it in to us that they've taken that vow. And it's a vow of honor, justice, and mercy. Those are the three points. That's the vow that you need to take. Administrators are responsible for, you know, when the court calls for a grand jury, they're responsible to collect the individuals out of a pool within that county and bring them together for the purpose, of course, of sitting on a grand jury or a trial jury. Your job also is to orientate the grand jury, give an orientation to also the trial jury, to be there for any advice that people might need in a jury, particularly in the grand jury, and to assist them in any investigations that they want to further get involved into or any questions they may have, and also at the end of the day, when they make decisions, to assist them in the necessary papers that need to be written in order to file, an indictment or a paper that they're not going to indict. In any event, that really is the job of the administrator. And there are four for each county. Every county must have a minimum of four administrators. Most counties will only have four administrators. If it's a highly populated county, then they'll have to figure out maybe you need six, maybe you need eight, maybe you need even 10. I don't know. But the administrators will look at their workload and add on, if necessary, other administrators to work by pulling these juries together. But I doubt many places would need more than four. Of course, you've got the four boroughs, which are counties, in New York City, which all of them have about a million, population of a million, some more and some just about. And, of course, they will need more than four administrators. Okay, we need people for grand jury administrations. There is no real experience that's necessary. we do question, you know, the person's experiences, and we'd like to know, you know, what your strong points are or your weak points are. But even if you don't have a lot of experience in any of the areas that you find on the questionnaire, you still would be able to take the position. It's on the job training for all of us. National Liberty Alliance will be here for questions for any of the jurists, you know, or the administrators, shall I say, any questions or things that they don't understand or they need to be clarified, National Liberty Alliance will be here to assist them. And if we don't have the answers, because we don't know everything, but if we don't have the answers, we will find the answers and get back to you. And we'll publish the questions and answers for others to assist others in that may have the same questions or concerns. So again, organizing is what we're doing on the grassroots levels for the committees of safety and for the grand jury or the trial jury administrators. Jen, do we have any announcements coming up? Or let's take questions first. Do we have any questions?
Well, we do have three questions. I would like to just make the brief announcement that the NLA News Service has your interview by Readout News, you and Gerard, from Sunday, and it's posted on the Monday night call, so anybody would like to go listen, it's there with the regular Monday night listings in order.
Okay.
The first question will be a breeze for you, John. Please settle a bet. Which is the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court or a court of record?
Well, court of record.
Yes.
And the subject.
Okay. Yep. Like I said, that's a good one. Number two, is NLA in agreement that a challenge to a judge's or magistrate's ruling is filed with the upper court to hand down a writ of error to the lower court? Specifically, does the injured party file with the upper court for the upper court to hand down the writ of error? Is this procedure called the appeals process?
Well, you know, look, the writ of error is filed directly upon the judge by the individual who is the sovereign of the court. Again, you know, if it's a criminal case, if there's anything that puts people in jeopardy of going to jail, okay, judges cannot make a decision on that. They can't. They cannot. Make a verdict and impose a penalty upon an individual. That cannot be done under common law. Common law in any criminal case, if it's called a criminal case, requires a court of record. It requires a trial by jury, an untainted jury. Unfortunately, it's hard to find anywhere an untainted jury. But if you are in a court and the judge is abusing his powers, and again, you know, if you open up a court of record, which means you're calling for a jury, you know, judges don't understand and lawyers don't understand when you open up a court of record what that really means. But you define it in the footnotes and you make the point in your paperwork, but define it in the footnotes. They don't even read that stuff, so they still don't know. And even when they read it, I hear from them, I don't understand. I mean, the common person who reads this stuff, who has no law background, generally understands what we're talking about. But these lawyers and judges that read this stuff often, they don't understand. And that's because they're filled with a lot of garbage, really, from school, from my opinion. But, okay, when you go into a court, and if they are abusing their powers, and they're trying to make decisions, and you've already opened for a court of record, and let's say it's not a criminal case, but you open a court of record, and then that judge becomes a magistrate. He becomes the administrator of the court. He's supposed to keep things moving along, but he cannot make a summary judgment. He cannot do it. If he does make a summary judgment, then and they do these all day long. They call conferences, and they make decisions, and they're really building the case in a way that they want to see it so that they can get the end result ultimately. That's what I see going on, generally speaking. You know, if you're up against the establishment particularly or corporate America particularly, that's what you're going to find. But, you know, maybe cases that the judge wouldn't care less which way it goes. Maybe they'd give you a good case there. I don't know. But anyway, like the Constitution provides for, it's an unalienable right, but the Constitution provides, we've established a $20 limitation. Anything over the value of $20, you can ask for a trial by jury. So you open a court of record. If it's a criminal court, automatically it's a trial by jury. And every time you get together and the judge makes all these decisions on you can't bring that evidence in, you can't bring this evidence, you can't say that, this person can't come in and talk, that one, look it, a judge doesn't have any authority or any right to say or do any of those things. You have the right to defend yourself and bring the evidence that you feel that's necessary and individuals that you feel necessary in order to defend your case. It's up to the other side to come with their axe and chop down your tree. Okay, and it's up to you to come with your axe and chop down their trees. So the thing is whoever's got the biggest axe wins ultimately and takes down the most trees, so to speak. But the thing is these judges all day long, you know, look what happened out in Oregon. Look what happened out in Nevada. They had, decision after decision, meeting after meeting, conference after conference. And every time the defense would bring up the prosecutor would bring up some evidence, the judge seems to let it come through. But every time the individuals who are being charged with a crime, and they bring up their evidence, and they denied. We see it all day long. They cannot do it. They cannot deny it. Okay? So if this happens, of course, you could do a writ of error. One of the key things is that when they're denying your right of due process and denying your right to ultimately defend yourself, that's a violation against an unalienable right, your right of justice, your right of due process. And that, if you're in a state court or some other court, that automatically makes it a federal case because the Constitution is clear that anything under this Constitution is the jurisdiction of the federal court. So you can then take it to the federal court for cause and fight the fact that you're not going to due process. If you can defeat that case in the federal court, there are ways you can do that. If you could defeat that in the federal court and the court says, hey, yeah, that court's not giving you due process, that court case is thrown out. So you can win on a constitutional, on a constitutional thing. We can need to, let me, Brent, if you can, just mute yourself, star six. Anyway, you can take this into the federal court. Let me see what else I can say on this. Repeat the question again so I can see if there's anything else I might want to comment on that, Jan.
Okay. You want me to repeat the whole question?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Is NLA in agreement that a challenge to a judge's or a magistrate's ruling is filed with the upper court to hand down a writ of error to the lower court, specifically?
Okay, stop where you're at. Stop where you're at.
Okay.
Just so everybody understands that part, you don't go to a higher court. You are the higher court, okay? And you can do a writ of error and overrule the judge. You don't want to do it in the courtroom because he'll try to get you, and try to, give you more problems, maybe even put you in jail or something. So you got to be careful. But you do want to do this very carefully and you want to be very polite about it, and you don't want to assault the judge or anyone in the courtroom. You just want to bring in the facts, and you want to bring in the law, and lay out by why that judge is in error, and then you can overrule that judge, you know. And again, if the judge ignores that and doesn't permit that to go forward, and throws it out or whatever he does with that, at that point in time, you've got to move it into the federal court. If you're already in a federal court, then you're going to have to really, move for the judge to be taken off the case. I haven't had a problem like that in the federal court, but that could come up. But again, if you're running your case properly in the federal court, there's a good chance you can win as long as you put the judge's flesh on the line. That's the key here. He needs to have a place to hang his hat, so to speak, if he's going to rule against you. But if you take away all those, every time someone, a peg is up there and you take that peg down and remove that peg and he has no place to go, he will probably push the other side to drop this case because otherwise he'll have to make a decision in a way that he doesn't want to make. Because, again, he tries to stick with the status quo. The corruption in the federal courts is just as bad as in the state courts. It's real serious. Now, there are certain judges, no matter what you do or what you say, they must have something real heavy on these judges, like the judge out in Nevada and the judge up there in Oregon and the judge up there in Montana. These three judges, I want to tell you something, they must have something on this, on these guys, these people, these judges, and in that they are willing to do things and say things that can put them in jail. And we are going to try to put them in jail. We intend on indicting these judges. But first, you know, we have to do our show causes to those three judges up there, out there, and give them the opportunity to respond. And then also we're trying to work towards getting acknowledgement by the Attorney General, where we have some prosecutors working with us. And then that is the point in time that we will move towards indictment. Of course, I can't say that they will be indicted. I think they probably will. But, you know, we have to bring it before the grand jury, and the grand jury has to decide. And once they make that decision, and I'm sure they probably will agree, then they will be indicted. And we will pursue the maximum for these individuals because they're destroyers of people. But these judges, they will do and say anything with no fear. There's not a lot of them that'll do that, but there are some. We had one up here in New York, Judge Teresi. He was willing to go to jail. I mean, willing to put crimes right on paper. So they must have something really heavy on that guy. To make him, perform for the corporate America or the status quo. But again, generally in the federal courts, most of the judges don't want to put their flesh on the line. So, and you could probably have them removed pretty easily. The best way to remove a judge is make him a defendant. Okay. Obviously, when you move to the court from a lower court to a federal court, okay, well, you're going to make all the judge and everyone in that court, the prosecutor, you're going to make them defendants inside of your federal case, okay? And that kind of signals to the judge there that you have no problem turning a judge into a defendant. And again, that puts a little weight on that guy. So if you are in a federal court, you're going to have to find a way to signal to that judge. Or if the judge just doesn't want to obey the rules and the law and do the just thing, if he just doesn't want to do it, then you have to make them a defendant. It's the only way that I know of actually for sure removing a judge. You can ask that he recuse himself or herself, and if they don't do that, then the next step is to make them a defendant. Then they have to get off the bench and someone else has to come in and sit there. Now, once that new judge comes in, they realize that you don't have a problem going after a judge. And you're going to go after that judge for denying your right of due process. Remember, that's the key, the Fifth Amendment, right of due process. That is your key. Of course, there are other rights that are under Bill of Rights that you can probably pull into your case, but the key one is the due process. You know, the idea for the habeas corpus is, the purpose of the habeas corpus is when a court refuses to give free people their due process, their right of due process. That's why that statutory process came up a few hundred years ago where in common law, and of course is part of American justice, which is the right to habeas corpus. So if you're in a court that is abusing their authority and power and not giving you your due process, you can move for a habeas corpus, which is a statutory way of pushing your right through the system that's on the books, laid out what they must do. It's clear what they have to do, okay? And if they refuse to do it, then they've broken the law, and they are subject to jail themselves at this point. That's a criminal offense because they're committing a crime against you. Now, of course, these judges, I don't know whether they understand this or what, but they ignore this all day long. But we're going after them. We got 30 judges on the line right now. We are going after each one of them. We're doing show causes on every single one of them, and we're putting their flesh on the line now. where they've already removed. We're giving them the opportunity, though. We're going to give them the opportunity before the default, because we know they'll default because they can't answer. If they answer, they got to lie. And they're not going to be able to move the court to throw us out for no standing because we have control on this court. At least we feel we do at this point, and we continue to have the control at this moment in time. But in any event, they're not going to be able to answer this. But they'll have X amount of days to answer it, I think, on this level, because you're going after a judge, or anytime you're going after anyone that is elected or appointed, you got to, in the federal courts, I believe you got to give them 60 days. Generally, for most people, it's 30 days. But in any event, we give them the time where they can fess up and say, hey, you know, I made a mistake, and we're willing to let that go. But if they default, then we are going to push them for criminal actions against them through indictment. So that's what we're going to do. But again, if you want to become educated on how to do these things, read our cases, read all our paperwork, and that the paperwork is the education. You know, look at you can read the Federalist Papers. We have them up online, and you can listen to the audio and read along with it, because we got audio and written word of the Federalist cases. Those are very important because it really explains the Constitution quite clearly. And, so you should be doing that. You should be taking our constitutional course and our civics course, a lot of history in our civics course, 120 hours of video mostly. And we ask questions concerning what you saw in the video and heard on the video. But these are the things you need to do. You also might want to go back into our state cases because they were more, they were done in a different way. It was early on, but a lot of ways that we've turned around and maybe made a judge a defendant, I think you'll probably find in some of those cases out on the state level that we have posted, that we've been involved with. But anyway, that's the way you deal with that. Now, continue on the rest of that question there, Jan.
Okay.
This is a good question, by the way. So a lot of good information.
Okay. Specifically, does the injured party file with the upper court for the upper
Absolutely
court
not.
To hand
Never.
Down the writ of error?
Never. No, okay. You do it yourself. You're the sovereign of the court. Remember that. Remember, you have to make yourself first of all, you know, if you are the defendant in that court case, you're going to move that court to do the proper thing. They're always going to do the improper thing. They're going to do the wrong thing. They're going to injure you more. You can count on that. I mean, it'd be very rare where they don't. So you're pressing them, really, for your due process and for them to run a court of justice. A court of law, which is a court of record, which requires a jury, and no judge can make a decision in that case. So once you push forward that way and that court refuses, now you're moving it into the federal court for cause, and you now become the plaintiff. Okay, they become the defendants. So at this point in time, you now have control of the court. Now, you have taken your sovereign right of due process, moved it into a court where you can get due process and get justice. But again, don't think because you're going into that court and you're telling the judge what's going on that he's going to rule for you. You have to really do some studying here and understand how to deal with this judge. And again, I think you can understand a lot of this by reading our court papers and studying other things that we have. And, in all our website, we have tremendous amounts of information. We have essays and lectures. We have, of course, all the founding documents. Where we have common law lectures. We have American history lectures, and we have some other articles and essays. We also have a lot of books up here that could be gotten and to learn a lot from. So again, it's all about reading and educating yourself. And the best way to educate yourself is reading. I remember when I first started studying the Bible, and I had by God's mercy, I found a very good Bible teacher I fell underneath and was able to learn how to really understand and look at the Bible. And from that individual and other teachers that I've had, I saw how to really look at God's word by comparing scripture with scripture, line upon line, precept upon precept. And each word and each phrase, you know, you look to see how God uses those words and those phrases other places throughout the Bible. But one of the key things that my teachers taught me was the most important thing to Bible study, you know, is reading. Read, 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 read. It doesn't matter that you don't understand most of it. You'll understand bits and pieces of it. Read, 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 read. Of course, do your studies, your word studies, your phrase studies, and so on and so forth. But reading is the key to the whole thing. Because at some point, you're putting all this feeding, all this information, all this data into your brain, and all this information, and from time to time, something clicks here and something clicks there, and you have these realizations, these epiphanies. And these epiphanies are the key points of working and dealing in the courts. Those are the things that you're going to use, is the epiphanies, the great conclusions that you will come upon. But you can't come to these great conclusions, you can't come to these epiphanies if you are not constantly being fed the necessary food, in this case, you know, the words of court decisions, great court decisions, American jurisprudence, founding fathers' statements and quotes, and looking into the common law and just reading, and all the things that we just spoke about, the essays and lectures, the books and the founding documents. Read, 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 read. You know, everyone should take, for instance, you should take our course, which really isn't a complete course, but it's a pretty good course on the Constitution. Take yourself and take the Constitution and slowly go through it and go into the Federalist Papers, working your way through the Constitution through the Federalist Papers, because that's what the Federalist Papers do, point by point, looking at what they've written down for the Constitution. And then you'll come to a good understanding. As far as the Bill of Rights is concerned, the Constitution is interpreted in light of the Bill of Rights. In other words, anything that a legislator might legislate or a judge might try to rule or move forward with, if it's repugnant to your unalienable rights, which we have some of them, of course, listed in the Bill of Rights, if it's repugnant to that, it's null and void. And you need to build that case, make that case, and if they ignore that case, you give them the rule of error. You can't rule against this. What are you talking about? And you give them all the information you need that you need to make that point. And then, of course, you can add them again. My only solution to these problems is continue to add judges and lawyers to defendant list. That's where I had. And you'll find that as soon as you add one judge to the defendant list, everybody else starts to worry about it now. So that kind of gives you an upper hand on it. But you do have to realize and understand somewhat what you're doing. Don't think you're going to go in there and just do these things and then not know what to do afterwards. Again, study, read. Okay, is there a final part to that question, or are we done with that?
Is this procedure called the appeals process?
There is no appeals to a court of record. Remember that. If they violate your unalienable right in that process, you're going to continue moving that case. But you don't. A court of record cannot be second-guessed. What means is once the jury makes a decision, it's final. They concluded the matter. The United States Supreme Court cannot overturn their decision. Now, there's always an exception to the rule, of every rule. If in that decision somehow someone's unalienable rights was violated, and they can bring that case to the Supreme Court to say, hey, look, this is what happened, and my unalienable rights were violated, and you could make a position on that, then in that area only, on that situation, the Supreme Court can get involved and do something to help that individual. But they cannot, if the jury decides that an individual is innocent, that's it, they walk free. There is no double jeopardy here allowed. If the jury decides the death penalty, there is no reprieve from that. There is no reprieve from that, period. Now, of course, if some evidence came to light that the person was, innocent, you definitely want to look at that, of course. Somehow an error was made, but generally speaking, I would imagine if you have a really good jury that's untainted and been orientated and understands what their duty is as a jury, the chances of them making an error is pretty slim. Not that it's impossible, because they could, but it's pretty slim. Unfortunately, when the judges are involved and taint the juries, that's where you have all the problems and all these people in jail that don't belong there. All these lower courts that think that they have the power and authority to fine and incarcerate, they clearly do not. There is no town court that has the power to fine or incarcerate. It doesn't exist. No town, no village court at all. County courts do have certain amount of powers. I do not believe, I'm not sure on this, I think the county courts cannot hear a criminal case. That has to be done in a state court or federal court, and I'm pretty sure of that. But I may stand corrected on that. I'll have to look a little deeper on that part. But in any event, a county court is considered a court that could be a court of record. And remember, look at this, what's called the equity courts. The equity courts is where the judges do make the decision. When you agree to an equity court, you can't have an equity court running a criminal case. That just can't happen. It must be trial by jury, period, end of subject, court of record, nothing else. But if you have a court case where it's a contract dispute, and you take it, and you have just courts, judges that really are looking to do the right thing, and hopefully that's what we're going to bring our court system to, then why not let the judge make the decision? It goes a lot quicker. It could be done in one day. I mean, even a trial by jury can be done in one day, too, on a contract case. But look, it could go a lot quicker to allow a judge, one single individual, to make a decision on a contract case if you feel that this judge is a righteous guy. He's going to make the right decision. And logic will prevail. You know, justice will prevail if the judge is just. If he does make the error and go the wrong way, you do have an appellate system you can go up. But once you go into that process, you're now going to have to use the appellate system. And at the end of the day, that's the way you chose. You can't come back to get a trial by jury. Now, again, if your rights are violated during that process somehow, then, of course, you can make a federal case out of it and move it into the federal courts. But, again, you're not moving the case into the federal court. You're moving the violation into the federal court. So that federal court will make the decision and then let the court, the lower court, understand what that decision is. So if that court, if you're making the claim that this court is incapable of giving you due process and that they are not operating under the rules of the common law and they refuse and reject it, then that federal court making the proper decision on that case could shut that case right down. They can't hear the case no more. Now, that doesn't mean that another court might try to take control of it. Of course, you've got the same process. You can move up. But if you're in a state court, then there's nowhere for them to go other than to drop the case. Again, every case does have, of course, its own things. All right, is that pretty much the whole question there, Jan?
We have one more.
Right, but we're finished with that question.
Right, that one is
okay.
All done.
Right.
Next question. It seems
that was
like
a good
most
question. I think it gave us a lot of good information to put out there. So, but go ahead.
Right. It seems like most people want to impeach the current president and get him out of office. With the recent testimony by fired and/or former FBI Director James Comey, the
Which I was
president's
very pleased
mon-
with that, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah, the president's monitor amongst the American people has fallen because of distrust in leadership. What role do you think the investigation played with the Foreign Intelligence Act of 1978 and or FISA?
I have no idea. Look, this is all about corporate America, you know, corporatism, okay? The powers that be, the status quo, okay, the elite, whatever word you want to put in here, you know, those powers, they're being crumbled. They're crumbling. I mean, this president is just taking them down. He's up there with an axe. Every time he does a good thing to build up America, they're being axed down because they've created all these problems and situations. I mean, if anybody is really paying attention to what's really going on, all you have to do is go to YouTube and start searching out, whatever's going on with Trump, and you'll pull up all this great stuff that he's doing all over the place. I listened to the entire hearing with Comey, the entire hearing. he really exonerated the president of the United States. It was his opinion, okay, in one of those things that the president said, I wish he didn't have to be indicted or wish he didn't. I forget what it was exactly, but he was kind of wishing something. He was hoping, that's what it was. I hope that that's not the case, something like that, okay? I think the president denied saying that. But even if he did say that, goodness, I mean, just think you're talking to someone, maybe they're a police officer and he's your friend and you know them, and they're talking about someone that you know, and you say, oh, my goodness, I hope that's not the case. You're not influencing that officer. You're making an opinion of concern and compassion for the person that may be going to jail, okay? And if it came out, that's probably the way it did come out. But in any event, the whole thing of the whole hearing is about a connection between Trump and Russia during the campaign and even after the campaign. And he was exonerated for that. I mean, it's just, it's a no-brainer. There's nothing there. So really, it went well. But as far as, they're going ballistic. They control the media. At least most of the media, and I'm surprised that Fox and some other conservative media is really doing the right thing and telling the story out there. So maybe they don't have as much control as we thought. But clearly on these other stations that seem to be communist control, I mean, nothing but lies, 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 lies. That's so obvious to those who are listening to what is really being said and done, and they come out and say these things that are just totally opposite of the facts and making these things up. Even Comey said all that stuff that the news has been putting out, it's all BS. It's not true. It's false. And they're still going out. You see, they have nothing else that they can do. Look, it was clear that Obama was their man. They got him into power. They were holding his hand during the process of him being elected and becoming president. They made him president. Evil was also holding the hand of the Bushes, of course, and even Clintons, okay? But this guy is his own guy. They never expected him to get in. And I don't think that they would dare approach him because I think they're afraid of him, and rightly so. Because he'll come out and just tell what's going on. And they're not going to impeach this president because there's nothing to impeach him on. It's just news to try to really prevent the people from knowing what's really going on. But you know what? You keep shining the light on the truth, okay, and shining the light on the evil, and eventually the people will get it. I've seen it in my life. I've seen things where the whole establishment is going one way, but the truth is really over here, and the people stick with it, and over time, the truth reveals itself. So there's no way that they got anything, at least that I'm seeing anywhere in the media, they have anything to be able to go up and try to take this president down. I don't see that possibility. When the lies come up, you can say it's a lie, and the best thing to do is move on at that point, ignore it. From time to time, make the point, whoa, that's a lie, that's not true, this, that, or the other thing, and then move on. Spending too much time trying to fight it keeps it alive, really. That's kind of a position we take here at National Liberty Alliance. When people say some evil things, we'll deal with it one time and move on. We're not going to empower these people by giving them a platform to continue with their lies and false statements. And that's what this president, I think, is doing. He's moving on. He made his statement. He made it very clear a few days ago where he was asked the question by the media in a conference. I forget who he was with, but in any event, other leader of another nation, and the question was asked, he responded and said he's lying, and he moved on. And that's the best way to handle those things. But we shouldn't worry too much about it. All right, what else, Jan? Anything else?
No, that's all of the questions.
Okay. All right. Do we have any announcements or anybody that needs to speak up before we move on?
Yes, we have two people. First, we tried to get Robert Overhill on last week, and we could not find him. I find him right now and unmuted him. He would like to say a few words about notarization of your affidavits.
Sure.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yes, we can.
Oh, all right, thank you. I had bumped into a couple of things. I get a lot of papers notarized. Someday I'll probably have to use them or in process now of. And one thing I was very disturbed about, I had a paper notarized by a city clerk of all people. And I figured, okay, and I wanted to have it notarized at the county level by the county clerk. She took one look at it and said, can't do it. I said, why? I said, what's the matter? She says, the other person that notarized it at the lower level of the city did not put in her middle initial. Therefore, this paper is not properly notarized. I said, thank you. The other thing, again, another little minor thing, a lot of them like to put the date that they notarize it by their initials or where they sign. I had one that had two different dates on it, which made it invalid. So just if you have things notarized,
well,
what date,
when you said you had two different dates, was there a date on the affidavit
yes.
and a date of the signing, and that was the problem?
No, two different dates within the signing of the notary.
So in other words, there were two people who signed, one on one day and one on another day?
Nope, just the same notary at the same time.
Well, that was an error, I'm sure, you know, right?
Yes, but it still made it invalid.
I can understand that one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, just be sure to really check things out. From what I see what's going on here lately in the last year and a half, it's getting real sloppy out there with these city officials mainly, and somewhat on the county level also. They got a lot of new people in there, and they're not of the same guard as the old guard. So I just wanted to mention it.
Okay. Thank you. Robert Bristow does not have a Patriot report this week, but he does have some comments about the meeting reminders for the rest of the week. Robert?
Yes. You know, we have very poor participation in the committee calls. And that's sad. We need to build up the participation from people. And I just want to remind everybody that on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, we have the call for courtroom observers. And maybe people don't understand the importance of being a courtroom observer. But they really need to come in because there are things you need to know. I mean, you need to know how to be most effective, and we will teach you how. And then on Thursday night, we have the committees of safety call, and we have better participation on that call. However, it can still be better. And so those who are interested in committees of safety, they need to come in and learn what a committee of safety is and the importance of it and how to form it. And also beyond that, and we're ready to once again to start at the basic and work our way up teaching you about the committees of safety. And it's one of the top priorities for us to achieve what we need getting back into the courts. And we need more people willing to step up and form the committees of safety. We need those who signed up earlier to form committees of safety to come into the call at 9 p.m. on Thursday evening, Eastern time. Let's step up and let's get this done. We really need participation. Thank you.
That's
okay, thank you, Robert.
Yep.
Okay, so that's it. All right, let's, before we move over to Brent, well, I'll tell you what, maybe we should move to Brent first. We do just have some people in the Q&A, and anybody else that wants to get into the Q&A, star 6 to get into the Q&A, but I'm presuming the first few people really have some questions concerning maybe the affidavit process that we're putting up, that would take an affidavit for the court case, or maybe they have some questions on the nonjudicial foreclosures that they might want to file, or other things. So, but anyone could get into the queue now, star 6 to get into the queue. We'll move over to Brent, and before we do that, Gerard, are you here?
Gerard? I am, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass control of the panel over to you. I'll be here for a while and see if some of these people have questions concerning the foreclosures and stuff. But so you take control of the panel, and we're going to move over to Brent. Brent, if you want to unmute yourself, we have Brent Winters, who is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law. If anybody hasn't read that book, definitely should go read that book. You should be able to Google it. Or Brent, if you give us a location, I know we mentioned this before, we'll post something up with a picture of your book or something. People can click on it and go to your site to purchase it, or wherever they got to purchase it from. But anyway, Excellence in the Common Law. Brent also has a website called thecommonlawyer.com. Brent, you got it.
Thanks, John. And it also, at Amazon.com, all the books are there. All the books are at Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and they'll come up. And then also you can find them at the website, www.commonlawyer.com. And there's a button there that says books, and you can click on that. There's also free audio resources there. I think there's about 200 audio clips there. Each of them about 6 to 8 minutes and 43 seconds long. The reason they're 8 minutes and 43 seconds is because I've discovered that's the limit of the size of the audio that I can load. I don't know why that is, but that's the way it is. If it goes over that, it won't load. That makes it nice, though. Nice and short, get the point across. You can find different subjects there according to their title in alphabetical order, I believe. Take advantage of those, and you can find descriptions of the books there. Back in 2010, I had a lady come to me who was a shaker and mover in a small town not far away, and she said, Brent, I want you to sell your books at an event I'm having. She said, I'll put a table right by the platform. It's going to be at the park in town, and I'll even put my daughter down there to help you sell them. She's real good looking. She said she'll sell a lot of books. That was true. That part was true. She's got pretty girls, two or three of them, as a matter of fact. But we were standing at the table, and the event was getting ready to go. It was a tea party event back in 2010. And there was a band on the stage that they had erected. And there were people in lawn chairs all around. And the newspaper was there, and I was quietly minding my own business. I was going to sell a few books. And I did sell a few, met a few people, saw people I hadn't seen in a long time, renewed some acquaintances. And the fellow running for governor was there. One of the state senators was there, politician. They were all cocked and primed to say something and get some time in front of the crowd. When the band quit, the MC said over the microphone, Brent Winters is here, and he's going to open up by saying a few words. Well, I didn't plan to open up by saying a few words. I didn't plan to say anything. I had no idea I was going to say anything, but I thought, well, I'll run up to the stage and say hello, if nothing else. But on the way up, and it wasn't more than 10 steps to get to the stage, I tried to think of something to say. And when I got, by the time I got to the microphone, I don't know how this came to mind, but I said, and by the way, the newspaper posted this and ran me down, and I'm glad they posted it because they took a video of me to put on the newspaper site, and I was able to get that video and post it. I don't know what happened to it, but it was a good short clip of about 2 minutes, and it just, things like that that you don't plan sometimes turn out good. And I thought that it turned out good. What I said was this.
Okay,
I said, if you want to know, if you want to know whether or not government is doing something that they hadn't ought to be doing, just ask yourself this. Could I or my friends together, could we do what government is doing? Would it be lawful for us to do that? And if it isn't lawful for you to do what government is doing that you have doubts about, then chances are government doesn't have any right to do that, and no lawful right. And the reason I say that is this. Because according to our fundamental law here in America, the state, the governments, don't have any authority that the people did not give them. And if the people don't feel comfortable doing this, that, or the other, and government's doing that, then it's a pretty strong possibility that government is outside of the law. And that's true across the board. Do you have the authority to bust into somebody's house without their permission and search through, rifle through their drawers and their papers and their personal belongings? If you don't have the right to do that without authority granted, a warrant, as we say, well, then neither do they. It's that simple. And that's just one example. There are many others, but that's what our fundamental document's about. And we're talking about the Declaration of 76, and that's the position that we as Americans took way back then among or within the relationship we had with our close associated nation, England. They were doing things that we knew we couldn't do rightfully, and if we couldn't do them rightfully, how is it that they can do it when they have no authority except what we've given them? Well, our Declaration of 76 says this. It says that we hold these truths to be self-evident. That means requiring no proof. We can take judicial notice, as the courts say, of this without proof. That all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Freedom comprises the drive to pursue happiness, the happiness of one's making all that happens happen. It's the freedom to enjoy life, the right to hold property, to acquire property, to hold on to your life, no matter what happens to you. That's what happiness is all about. Happiness concerns, they aren't spinning off words here, they're choosing them very carefully. Happiness concerns what happens to you, and what happens to you is not always what you want to happen. And we have the encouragement by our law and by our tradition to be happy. I know this sounds a little corny in some ways, but it isn't. Because without deep abiding joy in life, life becomes unbearable. And we have the right here to pursue that. And how do we pursue that? We pursue it by pursuing life, by preserving life of ourselves, our family, and our neighbors, and our countrymen, and preserving property of ourselves, our family, our neighbors, and our country. How do we do that? Well, we acquire property. We have also the fundamental right. I say it's a fundamental right, and I'm in good company when I say that. The fundamental right to pass our property along to our family intact without expecting the government to steal half of it or more. That's the pursuit of happiness. Making the best of what happens to you. Keep coming back. Knowing that there is opportunity, that the law will protect your efforts and allow you to be rewarded for your work. At least you have a shot at it here in America. That's the whole idea of America. Happiness is important. Of course, the secret to true happiness, the pursuit of it, staying happiness, is liberty. And liberty wells up only from the heart or the core, the being, the inside of life. And to use a French word, we call that courage, that which rises in your core. The French word for core, for heart, is cœur, same word, courage, what wells up from deep within. Our Declaration of 76 declares that those in government can never separate the individual from his fundamental rights. To review that again, fundamental rights are those duties, those stewardships, those entrustments that God gives direct to the individual. Entrustments, for example, the right to speak or not to speak, entrustment, power over your tongue. That's a fundamental right, and government has no authority to interfere. That's just one example. And no man granted these directly delegated God-given rights, these responsibilities, there's another word. And because man has not granted them, our Declaration of 76 does not grant them. Our Constitution of the United States does not grant them. These are recognitions. These documents recognize that our Maker granted them to us. And any person, whether in government or out, refusing to recognize or otherwise trespassing upon another person's fundamental responsibilities, getting in the way, hampering, impeding, delaying a man or a woman's exercise of these fundamental, directly delegated duties, is flying in the face of the Creator and will pay a horrible price. I don't want to see that happen, but I've discovered that it's not within my power to keep that from happening. The only thing I can do is do those things that would keep it from happening to me. I do not want to fly in God's face that way. I don't want to impede, hamper, or delay your use, your intelligent use, your discernment of your fundamental rights. And to that end, our Declaration of 76 recognizes that to use this word, the Creator has placed within, that means endowed. That doesn't mean robe you on the outside. That means puts it in your core. Endowed, each individual. That means all members of mankind with certain inalienable. That means you cannot separate yourself from them. You cannot redelegate them to somebody else. Rights, for example, if you have children, you have an absolute right to direct the education of your child. Supreme Court of the United States has recognized this. Pierce versus Society of Sisters, the case from the 1920s. Nebraska versus Mayer, the case, companion case after that. Yoder versus Wisconsin, another case, U.S. Supreme Court, holding that the parent of the child has the right, and in those cases it's called a duty, right and a duty, to direct the education of their children, the training. Now that being true, then it is also axiomatic that no parent has the authority to delegate that duty to somebody else. Now you can, I suppose I should say it this way, a parent doesn't have authority to delegate the responsibility to somebody else. What I mean to say is this, if you send your child, anyone sends their child, to a government school or a Christian school or another private school or a tutor, well, you can do that, and that may be a good option for you, but never forget, you cannot redelegate the responsibility. You're still responsible for the education and the direction of the education of that child. You cannot redelegate it. You will answer to the Creator for your duty, for your responsibility that He has given direct to you. That's why we're talking here, and that's why the Declaration of 76 talks about our duty of government among men. The duty to defend the law of the land, that's our common law, which is to defend the land against all enemies, foreign, that's by armed defense, if necessary, and domestic. That means you're willing to serve on a jury or defend rights and bring suit where you have to defend your own rights. And remember, in defense of your own rights, you defend the rights of all others. That to secure these rights, it says, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. It is government, as Red Beckman used to say, well, he's still saying it. I've been on the radio with Red recently. He's still on the radio once a week. But he makes the point in one of his famous presentations, as simple as it is, that it needs to be said. We give consent in America. And most fundamentally, the consent we give is as a member of a jury. As a member of a grand jury, we say to the powers that be, whoever the powers that be are, we say, yes, you may try this person for a crime. Or no, you may not. That's power, friends, neighbors, and kin. And then when you get to the trial jury, the juror at the trial jury, the petit juror, has the power to say, yes, you may take this man's life, liberty, or property, or a combination thereof. Or no, you may not. You may not take his liberty and send him to jail. You may not fine him $100,000. You may not put him in the electric chair. That's the power of the juror. God has instituted governments among men by their consent. And to not acknowledge that his government by consent is to turn it all over to tyrants, period, end of paragraph. That's the only thing that could happen if a people decide government doesn't no longer need their consent. And it looks to me, as I look around me and I watch what's going on, it looks to me like we're not giving a lot of consent. I was at a rural courthouse. Matter of fact, it's the only courthouse I've ever been in. Had some business there. And it was in a town in rural Nevada. And the courthouse is round, built in the 1920s. When you sit in the chairs in the courthouse, it's kind of funny, of a culture of a day gone by, the chairs were wooden, but they folded up, and then you walked by, and then you folded them down like the old chairs we used to have. You sit in them, and underneath every chair is a special holder for every man to put his cowboy hat. You know, those big hats that men used to wear. But at any rate, I went into this courthouse, beautiful old courthouse. It's round, and the courtroom, there's one courtroom in the center of the courthouse, and it's round. And the jury box is in the dead center of the courtroom. And the courtroom is so designed so that no matter how quietly one might whisper in the courtroom, the acoustics are so designed so that the juror, those in the jury box, hear everything that is said in the courtroom. So much so that I had people there tell me that they've seen lawyers have to go outside to talk to their clients. They can't whisper to the clients in the courtroom because the jury hears everything they say. Big domed roof to direct the or ceiling rather, and beautifully painted, by the way, reminded me of the beauty of that I've seen of some of these chapels in Europe. It was so beautiful. It wasn't that big. It was just pretty. But I talked to the clerk there. He was the clerk for the judge, the only judge in the courthouse. And he told me that there hadn't been a jury trial in that courthouse since he's been there, and it had been at least 4 years. No jury trial. Why aren't there jury trials? Why is it that when men have disputes, the jury doesn't get to decide? Well, I'll tell you why it is. Because it's easier, if your neighbor is doing something you don't like, it's easier to call the administrative agency, the bureaucrat, and tell him to come out and write him a ticket for not mowing his grass or for burning a brush fire against the ordinance of the county or some such a thing than it is to sue him for nuisance because smoke is driving you out of your house. The privacy, when I say privacy, I mean the freedom to sue your neighbor is part of our liberties as Americans. And no, don't tell me that the Bible says don't do that. I've heard that for many years. The Bible says don't sue your Christian brother. That's baloney. The passage that's cited for that says exactly the opposite. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 7. It says there, when you've got a problem, impanel the jury and bring it before the jury. That's what it says. Don't bring it before the pagan law of the city tribunals of Rome. There is no jury there. We have the jury. But I'm shocked we're not using it that much, and we should be. I know it's required in a criminal case if somebody wants it, but it's also required in a non-criminal case in England. The grand jury has been done away with, and they tell me, 1935, I believe they did away with that, and they tell me that juries are only used in criminal cases. They're no longer available in non-criminal cases, and there's a movement afoot very powerful in England as well as Canada to get rid of the jury entirely and turn it over to the experts. Experts. X is the sign of the unknown, and a spurt is a drip of water under pressure. My brother told me when I was a little boy, I think he's right. Well, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, what ends? Well, it tells us right there, the deriving of just powers from the consent of the governed. Any government that becomes destructive of men consenting to government, when that happens, it is the right of the people, I'm reading from our Declaration of 76, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government. Now, notice well, he mentions two things here, altering and abolishing. And the conjunction between the two is disjunctive. It doesn't say alter and abolish. It says alter or abolish. That's because altering is the first option. What does that mean? That means reform government, make a change, do something different because what we're doing isn't lawful. But when that doesn't work, then the abolishing is the next option. That's what it says here. Abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect, not affect, but effect, that's more direct, effect their safety and happiness. Notice what he says here. Again, not spinning off words. Organizing powers. You don't organize authority. No, you don't do that. That's not even possible. You organize powers. Power and authority are two different things, and our law has always made distinction between the two. Power is raw force. authority is right. There are a lot of actions of government that are based upon nothing but raw power without any authority. What is authority? That means lawfulness. Lawfulness. That's what authority is. Power is the whip, the gun, the cage, the stun gun. The German shepherd dog. It's power. Winston Churchill called our Declaration of 76 a splendid defiance. And he says it is that splendid defiance that forces all to decide. Splendid defiance that forces all to decide. The mention was made a while ago of the importance of reading. Just read it. Read it and think about the words, what you understand about the words. If you want to look one up, look it up. But just to start, just read it. And notice that it is a splendid defiance. It's not just any defiance. It's the defiance backed by law. As we like to say, the only remedy to lawlessness, and that's what we're watching, is true law. And true law comes from, has to have a pure source. If it doesn't have a pure source, it's not true law, and you may as well go someplace else. You're wasting your time. It must have a pure source, and that source is the only true lawgiver, the creator of all things of heaven and earth and all that in them is, the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, quoting our Declaration of 76, and the laws of nature's God, it says. That's our Bible, Blackstone tells us. Being in the common law tradition, our Declaration of 76 seeks not, as does the law of the city, it seeks not to avenge the past, but to secure the future. Revenge doesn't belong to men. It belongs to the Creator. Our job is to secure the future, not avenge. God will take care of it. And by the way, he'll do a better job than us. And if we get to jump in the gun and think we're going to avenge, it will go bad for us. I've lived long enough to see that, although I've always been told it's true. Our government uses power, but not every power it uses is a just power. In fact, some powers our government uses are absolutely unjust. There are two kinds of powers here of which we speak, just powers. The Declaration of 76 cites these, just powers and unjust powers. Just powers are those powers of government to which the governed have consented by giving them to the government. Thus, the government's exercise of just powers is by the people's authority. Unjust powers are those powers of government to which the governed have never consented, and they have withheld them from government. Remember, as we said in the beginning, government has no authority to exercise any power that the people did not give them. Therefore, it's axiomatic. If the people never had such authority, they never gave it to government. I had a fellow one time who was a client. He was a collector and made money doing this, a collector of Nazi artifacts. He had a whole warehouse full of these things, insignias, flags, army backpacks, boots, weapons, rifles, bayonets, everything, helmets. He had all sorts of things. And he was very much a student of the history of the Second World War in Europe and the history of the Third Reich. And it is a lesson. It's a lesson in the law of the city. So I, of course, the evil empire wanted to talk to him about it, and we had some discussions. And one time he said to me, well, he said the legislature of Germany gave Hitler the right to do what he did. And I said, now, wait a minute. You're telling me that the legislature voted to give Hitler the right to do all of the things that his regime did? They said, yeah. Of course, I'm thinking, well, if if the people, the legislature, or the people of Germany, let's say the legislature, never had that right, how could they have given it to Hitler? Again, another way to put it, no man has a right to do wrong. And the German legislature had no right to do wrong. It was wrong to give total power into the hands of a single will of any one man. And they did that. That's evil. Again, it's flying in the face of the Creator himself. He doesn't allow it. He said that governments among men, and he says this in his written, the Bible, governments among men cannot, by his law, gather all three powers of government into a single will, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. He says that. And if any person in the Bible, in the history that's recorded there, ever gathered all three of those powers into their own hands, they were severely judged to the point of death. King Saul of Israel is a good example. He did that, or he tried to do it, I should say. He exercised all three powers, and the story is told clearly, and then what happened to him? What happened? His kingship, his authority, was ripped from him forever, and from many of his descendants. Well, God hasn't changed. He doesn't allow that. He does not allow any one person, such as a Hitler, or a Mao Zedong, or a Mao, as they called him, funny name to me, to exercise all three powers of government. They will come to a horrible, eventually, end. Then it'll get worse after that. Well, again, as I'd said before, my views may or may not be the views of National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to let me say a few things. I assume that a lot of my views are the same, but don't count on all of them being that way, and if they aren't, it'll be brought up later, no doubt. But I appreciate very much the opportunity to say a few things about what I have given my mind to and what I've tried to compile over the years. And I'm just like anybody else. I'm trying to learn all I can and trying to pass along what I know and what I've discovered. And may God bless our country. Thanks, John. Or Gerard, whoever's there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, thank you, Brent, and you're welcome. Gerard, go right ahead.
Okay, so the queue is open. And I'm going to take, looks like William. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. From Missouri. Williams from Missouri. You've been unmuted. Here, we put him to sleep here.
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, I was just, going to ask about the proposal that I had, and I was just wondering, how do I know if it's the tax or the proposal by the bank?
Well, that would be you'd see that on the paperwork. Either the bank has filed a foreclosure or it's a tax foreclosure. It'll tell you tax foreclosure all over the place. So one comes from the county, which is a tax foreclosure, and the other one comes from a private corporation, which is a mortgage company.
Okay. So both of them can serve by the sheriff then, right?
Both what?
Is the foreclosure for the tax and the from the bank and the tax from the county, are they both served by the sheriff?
Well, the sheriff isn't going to get involved until after the foreclosure. There'll be a process of time. You'll get a letter of foreclosure. They'll tell you foreclosed. They'll tell you to leave the house. They may even come out and put a lock on your door. They don't have the power or the authority to do any of those things. So you have to ignore them during that process until you get something through the court. And, of course, you're really not getting anything through the court usually because most states are a non-judicial foreclosure state. But those who are, in most cases, I may be saying that backwards. Most states are not a non-judicial foreclosure state. New York State is not a non-judicial foreclosure state, yet they do non-judicial foreclosures, Okay. The few states that do do non-judicial foreclosures that have it on the record as far as, you know, that there was legislation that created the process, that's null and void. It can't be done because it bypasses due process. So in either event, they can't do it anywhere. The process that they always use is non-judicial. They don't want a judge. No judge really wants to put their John Hancock on that. They don't want to sign it. The judges in the non-judicial foreclosure states, okay, they might put their signature on it because they feel protected because there's legislation telling them that they can do that. And that's all out of ignorance. But nevertheless, the whole process is without due process. In other words, they never really give you due process. And what they're doing with their mortgage foreclosures is really monetarizing them. And that becomes another problem and becomes another crime. We lay that out on our paperwork when we file the papers for, you know, show cause by what authority to the judge who would be the chief judge of the court or the judge that might be hearing the case, which, again, generally they never put their signature on it. And, of course, also to the county if it's a tax foreclosure and also to the mortgage company if it's a mortgage foreclosure. But the sheriff usually doesn't show up until they finally try a lot of ways to get you out of that house. They may spend a year or two going through this process, even more time sometimes, going through this process before they actually get to the point where they try to move the sheriff in to throw you out. They'll actually sell your house more or auction it off and go through the whole process even before the sheriff actually does the dispossess. They may do it at the same time or they may do it right after the auction. But that's what they do. The whole thing, the whole process is illegal. If they had a legal way to go about doing this, they would do it. But there is no legal way for them to do it because, you know, first of all, there really exists no mortgage. That doesn't really exist. That whole thing is a fraud. Which we're not going to get into the details, but a lot of people understand that. You can study that outside, you know, National Liberty Alliance. I don't think we have any real details on that process, the problems with where this money comes from the Fed window. Also, the tax, there can be no tax on a property. I mean, look, you don't own that property if you have to pay someone every year to have the right to that property, which is called a property tax. They don't have the right to tax you know, private property, period. That's why they call your house residential or commercial, or they give it some kind of a name that they can move into their statutory process and do it. If you can move your house into private land, private home, private ownership, then that becomes an obstacle for them. And some people have done that, and the tax people leave them alone. But that's very rare. Most people don't even understand that. But the bottom line is they do it. The whole thing is done in a process called in rem. It's illegal, unconstitutional. It violates your unalienable right of property and so on.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
She wanted to know if the sheriff served those papers. Now, the sheriff can...
They can, but usually they do it through the mail.
The sheriff to serve any of those papers. It doesn't mean... It's an action for the sheriff. But when it comes time to get you out of there, what they do is they fill out papers at the sheriff's office as if you're a scofflaw tenant. They don't even tell him that it's a – they don't even tell him that it's a foreclosure. They just fill out paperwork saying they want you kicked out because you're on the property and it's not yours, and blah, just like they would do for a renter who didn't pay rent.
Right. The sheriff will come, could come and serve the papers if they pay the sheriff to do that. The mortgage company can pay the sheriff to serve the papers, and it makes it look more official.
Right, because he offers a service, and they like to use him because it makes it look official.
Right.
A lot of times, one of his deputies will come. You know, they pay him $25.
They're not going to throw you out on that foreclosure paper.
Right. But when it comes time to throw you out, then they file. It's partially a criminal thing because they're saying, you need to throw this person out off my property. It becomes their property.
Well, they actually had a writ of assistance that's how they, you know, they evict us from the property. And so even though that we had the land patent on that, the description on the house has been changed, it still didn't help. I mean...
Right.
They,
well, how long ago did you lose your home?
They sold it in 2015.
Right, so if you have all the paperwork so that you can have the name of the judge involved, if there was a judge involved, the name of the court involved, and if there is no judge involved, you go after the chief judge of that courthouse, so you get that person's name. Was it a tax foreclosure or a mortgage foreclosure?
It was the mortgage foreclosure because the bank...
So if you get the CEO, you get the CEO... Okay, or the president or whatever, whoever the top dog is, so to speak, with the mortgage company, you go after that individual, you get that information. That's the basic information you need to fill out on our form. And then you write an affidavit explaining your situation and explaining what they've done and explaining that they've taken your home and so on and so forth. You file it with us. We will file it in the courts for you with a show cause. And they probably will default that show cause, and then the federal court will have to then put out an order to restore you. And if they can't, for some reason, if they can't get the house back, because now they've run into another problem, haven't they? They resold the house. Now they're going to violate another person's unalienable rights. So, I mean, the settlement could be, you might take a settlement of being paid the value of that house, to purchase another house or something of that nature. I don't know. If you want that house, then it's your right to get that house. They're going to have to violate someone else, and that becomes another problem. And then you can tell that person, hey, by the way, go to National Liberty Alliance. They'll help you. And then that becomes a whole new story now, you know. But so that's what we could do if you need the help, and you can click on the what is it? Let me see what it says on the front. It's on our front page, National Liberty Alliance. Let me go there and just read what it says. It's also on the right-hand side. If you have a foreclosure problem, you'll see for sale, avoid foreclosure. And click on that and go to the page. But right below on the front page, right before you get to the welcome message, you'll see if you have a tax or mortgage foreclosure. If you need tax or foreclosure, mortgage foreclosure help, click here. And then you click there and follow the instructions.
Well, actually, I did the intake and the affidavit, and I'm waiting for them to respond back on that before
I... You might want to follow up on that because I don't know if you want to give me your name on the air, but... If not, I don't know whether your paperwork went through or not, but those people whose paperwork did go through, you can go up to highlight grand jury and come down to docket and see if your papers were filed there. It should be under non-judicial foreclosures. And if your name isn't there, then that paperwork, they're missing something, or they're just in the process of getting it together. I don't know. So...
Okay, I just follow up on that, so hopefully we'll get some answers soon, but I did send that in, and I appreciate it. I love be a part of NLA, and, you know, hopefully we'll do something in my area here, and
okay.
I just got the name of the guy that, you know, that is in the area, not really by me, but, you know, I think it's about maybe 30, 40 minutes away from me, but... I would love to be a part of this team. I appreciate
it. Well, please, you know, look at support us. Support us by giving us some time. If you have some time to give, an hour a week or more. Some people, we have people who give a full-time effort here, and as a volunteer, we have people who may give a couple hours a week. Whatever it is you can afford in time, you know, we need help. Everybody should be involved at least an hour a week. Every single member should be involved at least 1 hour a week. The other thing also is if you can support us financially by giving us $5 a month or more. We need the financial support to keep the lights on and keep going. So we need that.
John?
Yep.
Yeah. This is Jan. Yes, Azulu, I have had several emails from her. I sent her name and information to Melissa in Missouri, who's the state coordinator there, and asked her to get in contact with her to find some people in her area. And she has filed the forms, the intake, and the affidavit. That was the second. We have one case with same name, the two different
All right,
people.
Let's get into the details off the air on those things, and we'll follow up on them. So, okay?
Okay. Yep.
We'll
Thank
do that
you.
Tomorrow morning sometime. All right, you're welcome.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye, you.
Okay. Before I go to the next person, I just want to say, you know, traditionally, when land got put up for taxes, there was all kinds of impediments put in there to make it much easier for the original owner to get the property back. You could redeem that property even 6 years later, 6 and sometimes 10 years. I mean, it's not easy because if the person made improvements, you would have to pay him for the improvements he made. But they always had provisions where the original owner could come back and redeem it. They've removed all that.
Or maybe you don't like the improvements, or you don't want the improvements, and guess what? Whoever, you know, the judge and all these people involved that got together to defraud you, they're going to have to be responsible to bring your property back to its normal state for your desire. And it wouldn't be up. I don't think it would be to the burden of the individual who is being restored to have to pay for that would be included as part of as restitution. You know.
I'm just telling you the way the law was written. It was written into the law that in order to redeem it, if the person made some improvements, like came in and put a roof on it or whatever.
Yeah, but we can argue that point.
Well, I'm sure I know, but
they shouldn't have done that in the first place. Thank you for my new roof. But you see, it's not really that person's fault who put the new roof on. They have to be reimbursed, and in my opinion, they need to be reimbursed by the judge and the mortgage company. That's where they need their reimbursements. And if the sheriff participated in that, hey, I'd go after him too.
Well, look, they don't want it. People were unwilling to buy tax foreclosed land because it had a lot of impediments in it, and you didn't get a real clear title for a long time. And that's the way it should be. If they're going to take your property, they shouldn't be able to take your properties in the first place. But if they think they can, it should be very difficult for them. But they've removed all the difficulty right now. They want to encourage people to come up and pick these properties up for under market value so that the county can keep lining their coffers.
And then they'll
just raise the taxes until the new person can't afford it anymore, and they'll foreclose on them. Anyway, you know the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next caller. California Fred.
Hello, Mike. Is Mr. Winters there?
Oh, I'm here, Fred.
Yes, sir. I have a question, but Miss. John Dresch wanted to stay on point with foreclosures, court cases.
No, you can go now. It's okay. You can go right ahead with your question.
Well, listen to the question first, and I'll leave it to you guys whether you want to answer a little later after these people.
Okay.
Okay, my question is this, though. It's kind of important, I think. It's almost a panic important. Puerto Rico is having a vote whether they're going to enter statehood or not. And right now we have a bunch of states that are clamoring for a constitutional convention.
What
Along
states are
that,
doing that? Well, first of all, they're not going to get a constitutional convention. I don't see that coming. I mean, I'll let Brent comment on that too. It's really difficult to get that going. And the last thing we need right now is a constitutional convention. I think we need to fix the problems we have right now. If people think that to go to the Constitution and add to the Constitution to fix the problems, then they don't understand, and they don't understand the Constitution at all, because everything is already pretty much settled. There could be something we're missing. Well, I want to just make a few points, and I'll let Brent comment also. but go ahead. Did you want to add to this?
I'm trying to paint a nasty picture here, and you interrupted me.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I thought you were done.
Now here's part of the nasty picture. Okay, it's going to require a vote. Now, as you know, Puerto Rico is a territory. So it's under their voting system, all falls under the Congress. They have one congressional representative. And that means that the federal government can oversee the elections. And they're so corrupt, that's the hidden That's the state behind the state. They're liable to pass it. And if they do, we have enough states that have already asked for a constitutional convention. It's simply Congress recognizing the fact.
Right.
Look, I think you're worrying about something that can't really happen right now.
You're an optimist, John.
First of all, to try to get a constitutional convention, if they really started the process, it's going to take years to get that. And I think between now and that time, we're going to fix a lot of these problems. That's number one. Number two, it's the people that got to do it, not the representatives, not our government. This has got to be the people. The Constitution was written by the people. It is true that the people who did the Constitution, they belonged to committees of safety. They were part of the process to some degree, representing the people. They were the leaders moving this process along, trying to solve the problem, came up with the solution, and did what they had to do and bring this into power. Then, of course, most of them, they did get into office to try to get things going and just continue to try to press forward their opinions on how things should work, which is political. But nevertheless, here's the thing. The other problem here is with Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, you said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Puerto Rico, if they want to become a state, they have every right, because you're absolutely right. They are a territory, and the Constitution lays out the requirements in order to become a state. They clearly meet all of the – if you read the Constitution, Puerto Rico absolutely meets the requirements to become a state. And if they want to go through that process, they have every right to do so, and we should welcome them in as a new state. And that's not the only thing. You know, there's other territories that really been wanting to become a state for a long time. And they've been prevented from becoming so. But the Constitution allows for them to become a state. We should accept them and bring them in, you know?
Okay, that's an excellent opportunity to bring them in with a state constitution that only recognizes the two courts, equity and common law.
That's right. Absolutely. As far as a constitutional convention, believe me, that's a big job to try to get that going, and it's going to take years. I mean, here in New York, they've been trying to move for years and years trying to get a constitutional convention, a New York constitutional convention, and they still haven't gotten it. It's a huge, huge thing. If you look, really, most of the amendments to the Constitution was not done through a constitutional convention. There are a lot of problems with a lot of the amendments that are brought in. Some of them may be good, but most of them are a problem, and they were brought in by the enemy. But in any event, we're not going to allow that to happen no more. And I think this country is moving in the right direction. Look, this is my personal opinion, okay? I personally don't see the elite surviving. A year ago, I thought the other way around. Boy, we're in trouble, and only by the grace of God. And it's still only by the grace of God. But tides have turned. Things are happening. And not only with the movement of what we're doing, there's other people have a lot of movements going on, and there's a lot of pressure. And you take what Trump is doing, he's destroying them. I mean, he's bringing business back. He's bringing the American dream back. He's cleaning up a lot of stuff. The economy is getting better and better. That's a major problem, because the Fed could pull the plug. But I think the Fed was going to think twice before pulling the plug, because I think this guy in office understands the process and knows exactly where and how to point the finger. And that becomes another problem to them, because the last thing they want is for the light to be shined on them. And look at what he's doing with the taxes. He's claiming that he's going to be able to bring the taxes down. He knows something, or is doing something that I'm not aware of exactly what he's doing. But he feels pretty confident that he's going to bring taxes to its lowest point. And I believe he knows that, he's got to take a step by step. He knows that the Fed's got to go. We all know that the Fed's got to go. And we're going to get us empowered, get the people empowered in the courts of justice, and the Fed will go. But, you know, I think it's a problem that's still a while off. I agree we need to keep our eyes on it, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And it's going to take a decade to move for maybe 4, 5, 6 years, a decade to move for a constitutional convention. And I think this country is going to change, direction so extreme over the next 4 years. or even 8 years, if God allows us to continue, you know, that constitutional convention is going to be realized not needed. Because all we have, look, we're not even applying the Constitution we have. That's all. That's the solution. And any reasonable person, if they're really serious about this and think that they're educated enough to make the decision that, yeah, we need a constitutional convention, then they're not educated at all. And if they are open to listening, we can show them quite clearly how all these problems be fixed just by exercising the Constitution we already have and exercising the rights of the people, their unalienable rights in courts of justice, and that will clean up all the problems. Well, anyway, Brent, if you want to comment, or Gerard.
Oh, just to make mention that it certainly is true that it's not proven nigh near impossible to get a constitutional convention going to pass any amendments. I don't believe it's happened, but maybe just once, maybe twice. I'm thinking there was one amendment that was ratified 202 years. The 27th Amendment was ratified 202 years after it was first proposed, ratified in the year, I believe, 1992, if I'm not mistaken. But most of the amendments have been ratified by state legislatures. Amendment 21 was ratified by state conventions. And even the ones that have been offered, I think somewhere around 9,000 amendments have been proposed. Congress has considered around 9,000 amendments to the Constitution, but has only submitted about 33 to the states for ratification. The Constitutional Convention, from what I can gather, is not enjoying, is not getting much traction. And the excellent point made a while ago that why don't we just take what we've got? We can't even, number one, we don't know what we have in the Constitution as a people. Number two, we're not using it. We're ignoring the 80% of it, 75, 80%. Why is it we want to change things? It seems to me that there are some things, well, matter of fact, I say it seems to me, I'm being modest. No, it's true. True law never changes, never. And the first principles of our law are as old as the lawgiver himself. Things like, as mentioned a while ago, separation of powers. People say, well, what about the Second Amendment? That's changed. There was a time when people didn't have guns. That isn't an eternal principle. No, that's an eternal principle. Self-defense is an eternal principle. God himself gave us jurisdiction individually to do certain things. He gave us, that's a right, it's authority. He bestowed authority upon each one of us. And with the bestowing of that authority comes also the duty to defend that authority, that jurisdiction. There are two ways to do that, fundamentally. You do it in the courts, serving as a member of the jury or by suing. That's the preferable method. But when that doesn't work, then there are other ways. If somebody tries to break into your home and hurt you or your family, you're justified in deadly force. That's axiomatic. It's always been that way since the beginning of time. By the way, in the beginning, parcel of real estate was delegated to our grandpa, Adam, and God told him to defend it. That's what shomer, the Hebrew word, means. Translated keep, the guard, K-E-P. Well, that's an old English word that means fortress, if it's used in the noun form, and it means armed force, if necessary, deadly force, if it's used in the verb form. That's what God commanded our grandpa, and he didn't do it. He let the wrong thing wriggle in, and we have a duty to defend that. Well, along with that duty comes the Second Amendment, applied that first principle, applied today, in a day when men have discovered the use of expanding gases, rapidly expanding gases to drive a projectile out of a barrel of a gun. Now we have the right to do that because under that principle that we're to defend our jurisdiction, our homes, our land, under that principle we have a right to keep and bear arms. Yes, so the Second Amendment is an eternal principle applied in the modern day. And the principles never change. The law never changes. Our Constitution is a brief of common law government. That's never changed. It never has and never will. It is eternal. And if a law isn't eternal, that the principle, the first principle, I keep saying first principle, our common law's law, first principles, and if the first principle is that we call a first principle is not applicable at all times and all places among all men, then it's not law. That's it. Bottom line.
Well, amen.
It is I yield back to you, John. Go ahead.
Well, amen. You know, look at I personally think that every amendment after the Bill of Rights, the 11th and on, is subject to, really scrutiny. I there could be a problem with a lot of it. I looked at some of them, and I'm back and forth on some of them, but some of them are clearly a violation to the Constitution itself. We know that the Bill of Rights was agreed upon. It says right here in the preamble that and it talks about the convention of the number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. And that, of course, is the Bill of Rights. And so, Jefferson spoke about this, and I think it was extremely important. If these Bill of Rights was never added to the Constitution and was never agreed upon before the signing of the Constitution that they would add them, we'd be in really big trouble, because it is the Bill of Rights that really defines the whole Constitution. Anything in the Constitution of any power that they have, and if they try to exercise that power in any way that is contrary to the Bill of Rights, and ultimately to any of our unalienable rights, some of which are protected by the Bill of Rights, it's null and void because it is repugnant to the Constitution in itself. But, the most damaging amendments that were made to the Constitution is the 16th and the 17th Amendment. Both of them were done in 1913, and that should make it really, us question what's going on here, 1913. That's when the Fed came around. It was in 1913 and 1916, I think, but 1913, I believe it was. But look at the 17th Amendment. Took the power of the election of the Senate by the states, and it destroyed the rights of the states by removing their representation in Congress by having a Senate. The Senate has to vote on anything that the House votes on, that the Congress votes on, and if the Senate denies it, then it's not going to go through. If any of the two houses deny it, they put each other in check. But it's in direct violation of Article 5, where we read concerning the states and the power of the states. It says that no state, without its consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. There is no equal suffrage in the Senate by the states. The states have no representation. The people already had a representation by having Congress. Okay, we have a representation, but the state needs a representation too. And each one of these two senators sent by these states are simply controlled by the legislators of that state. They have lost, states' rights have been lost, and that's why states are being walked all over, because of this 17th Amendment. And the 16th Amendment, of course, was destructive economically to the whole nation, and we see what's happened with that. How can you tax someone's income? And the Supreme Court, of course, has ruled numerous times that you can't do it, and it really has done nothing to take it away and put it back to where it belongs. Only corporations can be taxed. You can't tax a human being. But they do. And at some point in time, we're going to deal with that and make that correction. But I'll tell you what, a lot of these other amendments, they're not needed, in my opinion. Some of them are problematic. Some of them play with words. They have the Organic Act of 1871, I think it was. And with that Organic Act and the words that they have in like the 13th or the 14th Amendment, it just creates more problems. But it's all fraud anyway. This idea of making all the people slaves. Through what was it? Is that the 13th Amendment that does that, or the 14th? I think it's the 13th and 12th, 13th, slavery. No, 14th, one person naturalized. Okay. I forget which one. I'd have to sit and read through this. But anyway, but it's all play on words. It's all fraud. It's all null and void anyway. And clearly the 16th and the 17th Amendment easily is repugnant to the Constitution, the body of the Constitution, and the fact of representation by the states is totally lost. That just nullifies it right there. But anyway, Gerard, if you want to add anything to this?
I did, but I forgot what it was.
Okay.
And I think Puerto Rico passed the referendum to become a state. I don't know what the next step is, but they were having a vote.
When did they do that, do you know?
Just yesterday, I think.
Okay. I'm surprised it took them so long. They should have been a state a long time ago.
I think I read that in the past, but, it's not automatic. That's the thing. Even though the people vote on it, there's other steps that have to go through. It's
right,
the same as
constitutional steps, but they cannot be rejected.
Mm-hmm. So just for that point of interest. Anyway, I have nothing else. I'll get the next caller.
Right. Well, anyway, by keeping territories is another way for them to play the word game because, you know, they play that citizen game. So it's just another game they play. And that's why they prevented a lot of these territories from becoming states. And even early on, even in the 1800s, you read the history of what was going on with a lot of these states trying to become states and the resistance they got and all of the corruption that took place to prevent one thing from happening and breaking. You know, it's just really sick. But again, the enemy is always there. And the only way we're going to keep the enemy out and deal with the enemy is get just courts. If we have just courts, we can deal with the enemy. And you know, they would never be a burden or a risk to us and our liberty. All right, you want a final statement on that, Fred? Will we move on?
No, sir. I think I've taken enough time.
Okay.
But thank you for your answers, everybody. I'm going to mute out.
Thanks, Fred. Gerard?
Oh, okay. Go to the next caller.
So don't clear the queue now.
Yeah. Well, I'm hitting the next question. I don't know what's going to happen.
That's them there fat fingers of yours.
Hello.
Hello.
Good evening. How are you guys tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. I was on the last Monday night call, and I was given information to seek a mortgage defense for forensic analysis. And I called the guy, and he never returned my call. I think I called him like 3 or 4 times. But
did you fill out the form and send it to intake at nationallibertyalliance.org?
I've already did all that. But
okay.
Currently, right now, my house is up for sale in 2 days, and it's cash only. And I had a guy looking around my house over the weekend on Sunday. And I called Fannie Mae, and they, you know, would listen to me, but they would never call me back. So I need to know what I need to do at this point, because at the last Monday night call, the guy I was talking to told me to let you guys know if they didn't call me back, and they didn't. But I'm in a situation right now where, you know, I went down. I called the courthouse, and they told me my house was sold. And I went down to the courthouse, and it was like they sold it to themselves. And then my house is now being auctioned off.
That's a big joke. Isn't it a big joke? We sold it to ourselves. I've heard that one already. I can't believe that they've moved to that point already. We sold it to ourselves. Look at how where can there be a conflict of interest with that now, huh? Look at what you need to do tomorrow, give a call to Jan. Go to the directory and find Jan's phone number. Give him a call, and he'll try to get hold of someone to talk with you. I know April is ill. I don't know. Is April still out on us,
Jan? Yes, she is. We have gone through and filed all of the forms for Felicia already.
Okay.
For foreclosure.
So I don't have it yet. I haven't seen it.
Unless
I don't know those. Is that the first name or the last name?
That's
the first
name,
right?
First name.
Okay, yeah, I only know by last name, so I wouldn't know. Did you look to see if your name was out there on our page?
Well, I haven't yet because my only internet access is with my cell phone.
Okay.
So I did my constitution course with my cell phone, but I put in for technical support for the civics course, and because I can't hear the video, I've seen the questions. I don't know. I did phase one. I'm on phase two. But I can't see it anymore with my cell phone.
All right.
But I think that they did a homestead foreclosure because when I looked at the paper, it said homestead. So I heard you guys talking about taxes and other things, but I think they did a homestead foreclosure on me, and I have people coming up to my house, and my dogs are barking. And
well, that's
pretty
interesting.
And they're running away.
If you filed a homestead on your property, okay, which everyone should do when they buy their property, that means that no one can take that property away from you ultimately in a lawsuit. They cannot take your home. And if they cannot take your home, how can the tax people take your home, or how can the mortgage companies take your home? And Fannie Mae, of course, is only a program, really. They didn't loan you the money. Look at that's the process. That's just a process of filing. The Fed actually supplies the money for that, and they just nothing ever really gets even printed out. Okay, so but in any event, the banks do the process, or a mortgage company, or somebody that just specializes in setting up mortgages. They don't have to necessarily be a bank. But anyway, they go through the Fed window and they get the necessary, chips from there, so to speak. You know, it's digits that they just move from one bank to another. It's digits.
They put a lock on my door. They put a lock on my door, and they put
that.
A letter on my saying Fannie Mae now owns it.
Who put the lock on the door?
Some local real estate agency, Arrow something.
Then just go.
And I literally went online and seen my house for auction. And
are you the lady? Are you the lady last week that went and cut the lock off?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you did the right thing. No one can do nothing. They don't have the power or the authority to lock up your house. The sheriff's got to do that. They don't have the power or the authority to kick you out. The sheriff's got to do that. Look at so you can ignore all that until it gets to the sheriff. Unfortunately, the sheriffs are hard to talk to because we tried talking with the sheriffs, but now we'll go through show causes. But look at call Jan tomorrow and find out the status of your paperwork, and we'll get it through this week, hopefully. Okay.
It was filed, John. It's in the file. It's in the docket. It was filed this weekend or whenever you filed those. It's number two on your list.
Okay, number two on, hold on a minute, the docket page, right?
Right.
Okay, so then it's been filed. You should be getting a copy tomorrow probably because we send you a copy too.
Do we have a letter in there?
So what am I supposed to do? I mean, I don't know what to do because...
Read the paperwork that we sent you, okay? Maybe talk it over with a friend. Think about it. You know, take it your time and read through it slowly and see what you can understand. Then come back next Monday and ask us questions. And that's an education not only for you but for anyone else that's listening.
And I know a lot of people that have been kicked out, so.
Well, send them to us and we'll try to help.
I have another question. I would like to join the natural committee. How do I go about doing that?
Because which committee?
I went to the tab, it was asking, you know, I've seen a lot of things there, but the safety committee, I understand the safety committee, but I think I have a lot of information to help with
I'm missing the word. What committee are you looking to join?
The natural committee.
Natural healing?
Natural. Yes.
Which one is it, Jen?
Natural healing committee. Okay, you go to their webpage and they give you
Did
the
we
director's
ever
name.
We got something started up with that, right?
Yes, and the phone number is there to call and the email number to contact Ed, who is in charge of that committee, and talk to him.
So she can find that in our directory, right?
Yeah, the mission statement is there. Under committees, you can find it, John.
Okay. Okay, so there'll be a contact name, and you can call that person. If you have any problems, you can always call Jan, and Jan will help you work through it.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
John, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, do we still have a letter in that packet that she can take to the sheriff?
No, we stopped doing that. But look, we may do something with, oh goodness, what do they call it? The list pendants, is that what it's called?
List pendants, yeah.
We could try to create something there, and then they can file that in the court too. But look, once we do the show cause, and the person which we're helping has a copy of that show cause, she can always bring it to the sheriff and say, wait a second, this is in court right now. Look, and show him the paperwork. And that sheriff should back off.
Yeah,
but
I
if he doesn't, the only you know, really, you know, satisfaction that the person has is the fact that, look, at the process of time is going to take over. They're going to default, and then the federal court has got to give the default.
Well,
so that's what
know,
they can rest.
Ultimately, the sheriff's the one that's going to come out the victor. So I think it's important that he gets some kind of piece of mail that says, look, I'm contesting this. You know, I don't know what kind of sheriff she has, but, you know, if he's a good guy.
I think that we should add that to the part of the process to tell the person to go down to make an appointment with this sheriff, go down and see the sheriff, make a copy of the paperwork that we send to them, and file it with the sheriff and let them know that, you know, there's a problem in the courts and they're doing some illegal stuff here. And in any event, I got it in the federal court. Here's the paperwork. The show cause is now in the process. So if you get any papers to come and have me kicked out of my house, you need to deal with this paper right here because this trumps it. And we can do maybe get a form together for a list pendants. Is that what they call it?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure. What's the proper wording of that, Brent? List pendants? Pendants?
Less pendants, yeah. It's a
less pendants.
Threshold motion. In other words, a motion filed beforehand. That's why I remember it anyway.
Okay, we'll try to work that out with these people that are really close to the edge on this and may help them with the sheriff and also put the court on notice. That it's in the federal court. So, and remember, we moved it. The paperwork that we send to you says that this case, this was moved for a cause to the federal court. And the cause is the fact that is a violation of an unalienable right of yours protected by the Fifth Amendment, right of due process. So, you know, that in itself should be enough for to back off the sheriff, the language right there. It's been moved into a federal court.
Listen, the whole tax foreclosure thing is a due process thing because no matter what, they're violating your due process. I mean, even them charging you tax illegally is violating due process.
Right.
So, but anyway, that's another story. All right, so
John, or just meant to make mention, I've never filed less pendants, but LISPENDENS, I've read about it. It says here, I just looked it up, says it's a written notice that a lawsuit has been filed concerning real estate. Well, that would apply to what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Involving the title of the property or claim interest in it. And what you're saying is, that makes sense to me, if the action's been moved to federal court, then people ought to be put on notice. And if a federal case doesn't back people off them, as they say, the formidable power of the federal courts doesn't back people off. They're not thinking.
Right.
So that makes good sense what you're saying.
Yeah, so we'll put something together on that additional paper. But again, the paper that we wrote is also just enough that it's been moved for cause. And, of course, we're notifying the judge, so the court has been notified. We're notifying the mortgage companies that are trying to take the control, or the tax, the county treasurer that's trying to take control. So they're being notified to back off. The court's being notified to back off. The only one that needs to really be filed something with personally by the individual is the sheriff. So the individual should take a copy to the sheriff and say, just let them know that, look, if anything comes up and some papers get crossed in the mail and you're coming out to have me thrown out, I want you to see that this case has been moved into the federal court right here, moved for cause, and it's got all the information in there. And that should be enough. But meanwhile, we are going to look at a list pendants. Maybe we can write something right up into the paperwork, add it into the paperwork, and make it part of what we're mailing out, that you can file at the court another piece of paper at the same time, and to the sheriff.
I think it works best with the sheriff, because he's the last man there, and if he looks up pendants like Brent just did, and he sees that it's a case file on real estate, look at it. If they don't have the sheriff's cooperation, they can't come in. So that's a good stopgap.
That's right.
So I think it's important.
That's the way to go. I'm going to do a little more studying on that and see how we can incorporate it into the process that we're doing. And so in order to incorporate it into the process, we may mail out an additional paper to those people we've already filed that could be taken to the sheriff and filed with the court. Okay. As a matter of fact, you should go down and make sure that it is filed in your court case, a copy of what we've sent you. When you get it in the mail, and that's something we should add to the instructions, when you get the copy into the mail, you should make a copy of it, take it down, and file it in your court case to make sure that the clerk knows to be filed into that case, in your case there. So everything's been moved up to the federal court.
Right, because by the time they get down and noticing the clerk, there could be a week or two in passage of time.
Right.
And
okay, any other questions on this? If not, we'll move on.
No, I guess she's done.
Okay, that was a good call. Thank you.
Okay. We have North Carolina Allen, who's next. And you've been unmuted.
Hey, just trying to get help again with the Samuel Gerard situation, and still, after 2 weeks, still have not been able to get a hold of anybody or get sent some paperwork in, but, still not getting response back.
Where'd you?
Response from who?
I sent it to Gerard and called and got a hold of him one time, and then tried to call him again, but I haven't been able to do that. So
yeah, what paperwork? What are you trying to do?
This is the Amish guy that they arrested the FDA.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you sent it to my email, I didn't get it. You sent it to Gerard53@live. I went through my mail every day and I didn't see it. I don't know if you also sent it to the NLA.
Yeah.
Also.
Oh well, I did NLA, and I had somebody else to send it to you or try
to. Yeah, but they have to spell it out. Look, they have to spell out National Liberty Alliance, and it's a .org. A lot of people automatically put a .com there or even a .net.
Yeah, but I gave him my personal email to send it to me, and I don't see it in my personal email, so I don't know if they got the address wrong or what. I mean, I go back and check it. I expected it to come.
Yeah, did you get the one tonight? Because I just sent you another email tonight.
Let me see. I'm going
to your personal email, but I had someone else to try to send you to friend you on Skype so they could send you the documents that way as well, because we've got the affidavits kind of done for some of them.
What's it coming in under? What name do you know?
It's getting
kicked out?
I don't know.
Oh, here, Alcohol Patriot. I see it here in my junk box.
Yeah, that's my email. That's right.
That came in tonight. Is that Alan Hyde? Is that how the other one got sent in? It should have had.
Yes, but not the affidavits. The affidavits was going to be sent to you through Skype.
Through Skype?
Yeah.
So in order to get them through Skype, you would have to have put me in as Gerard Fix It for you.
Yep, and that's what she be sent you a friend request to that.
Check your friend request, Gerard.
I found the affidavits here.
Okay.
Yeah, they got kicked into my junk box, but.
Okay, why don't you and I discuss all this? Put it in my box too, Gerard. Put it in my Skype, and we'll discuss it tomorrow.
Okay. I'm heading to Kentucky to try to start a committee of safety there. I'm going to be going before the sheriff and holding him accountable. And
right, but remember, look at when you start off a committee of safety, remember you're out to make friends. And the best way to make friends is to empower your friend. And the friend that you want is the sheriff. And you want to empower the sheriff constitutionally, things he doesn't know. You want to educate him and explain certain things and share documents with him. And you can get all this stuff up on our Committee of Safety page and go to the meetings to learn about this stuff. But the thing is this, is when you start showing the sheriff his real authority and powers and prove it to him, you know, things that he doesn't even know or she doesn't even know that they have such powers and authority, they're going to like this. And they're going to like you too. And your group is becoming involved, and you're going to support that sheriff to get elected again and so on and so forth. So you want to make friends with that sheriff. And then, you know, even if he's not on your side on things, you want to educate him is the key. You don't want to separate yourself from him. You want to educate them and become his friend, his or her friend. Then the next thing to do is now you're going to start going to the towns and to the counties, you know, your county and in your town. So you want to go to the town, all the town towns and cities within your county and get involved there to become friends with them. And the sheriff, if he's on your side, His paperwork and his signature will be in with your process. We put this whole thing together on how to do this. You can download the instructions, download the documents, and you can come to the meetings. Just hit COS on our blue bar and follow the instructions.
Right. But this, you know, this is not my county, not my state, but I'm just going to try to get it off the ground and get them moving. But Samuel's been in jail now around 150 days, and he's going to be sentenced on the 30th of this month. So, you know,
well, we'd like to move on it real quick, and let me talk with Gerard about it tomorrow. Be available some way, somehow, where we can get in touch with you. Maybe we can drop you an email or something and give you a day and time, because I know you have a phone problem or something. But somehow work out a place
really
where we can get in touch with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have my phone with me all day tomorrow, and which I think.
Okay, Gerard, you got his phone number now?
I have his phone number. Hey, I got a contact request here, but it's no name. It's A2JUUUHMS54 with a bunch of S's. That's not you, is it?
No, that's not it.
Okay. So I don't see anything that I would recognize.
The friend request would have been, I think it was 2 days ago, three now. But
Saturday is when that one came in.
Yeah, no, this was Thursday.
Well, that might be
Friday.
It, Gerard. Who knows what Skype name he's got.
Well, he just said that wasn't his name, and I don't want to click on it if it's some.
Yeah, but didn't he say his friend did it? Did your friend do it or you did it?
No, friend, yes.
Friend, so he may not know what the friend ID is on the Skype. But look at if that person that you allow as a friend is a problem, you know you can right click them and discard them.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna.
I mean, I approve everyone that asks me to be a friend, and every once in a while I get somebody, you know, saying weird things, and I immediately just delete them.
And this the judge on this jury trial, he he went through the list and knocked off some of the people initially, his own self, before he brought them before the prosecution and the defense, and then let them go through it. I mean, there's just been, there was the FDA on the witness stand, committed perjury, and the judge didn't do anything about it, under witness from their own side, and then a witness, another witness for the state, a deputy sheriff, got on the stand.
Was this a federal case or a state case?
No, this is a federal case.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
So a sheriff deputy refuted everything that FDA agent said. So, I mean, it was a clear no. I mean, it was cut and dry. It was a perjury that was done by the FDA, and the judge did nothing about it.
Can you give me the name of the case? Can we look it up on the internet?
Yeah, it's if you look up Samuel Girard, G-I-R-O-D, all kind of stuff comes up. A lot of information's been out there now by.
He's an Amishman from Kentucky, right?
That's right. Yes, sir. Bath County, Kentucky.
What's the county?
Bath, B-A-T-H.
Okay. And in a nutshell, I remember you called last time. In a nutshell, what's the charge exactly? What do you do that they don't like?
He grew natural stuff on his farm. The main ingredient was chicory. He's done it for around 20 years, but it got so big and so many people liked it that Amish and other states requesting it, wanted it, and they started selling it and stuff. And so in Missouri, someone challenged it or whatever and sent it to a court or some FDA, and then they got him on, started getting on him about interstate commerce.
Well, what does he work on? What do the people use the chicory for?
Salve for, he had kind of listed some things about cancer and some other warts and things of that nature. He had three main products.
You put it on, cancerous looking places on your skin. Is it a black kind of a salve?
I'm not sure the color, but it was a salve. And so they were saying he was misbranding it as a drug, and and then they got him on 13 counts, and one of them was that he threatened the FDA agent, and like I said, it was showed in court by perjury of the FDA that was a false charge, false claim, and it was refuted by the state's own witness.
How many years is he facing?
Well, a total, none of them combined or whatever, but each one of them added up 68 years.
No,
let
boy,
me ask you,
rough.
these are all statutes that were applied against him in a criminal case. Were you in the courtroom? Did you hear what was going on? And did the judge talk to the jury about these statutes, that if he broke these statutes, that they have to rule him as guilty? Did the judge say anything like that?
Yep. Well, I wasn't there, but I've got, that is what was said because I've got a court transcript.
Oh, then you sent that to us? Copy of that?
Well, I got, it's about 900 pages for the 303 days.
Can you make a copy of that?
Yeah, we was trying to get some of this sent to you through Skype, but I can get it to you whatever means necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, that's too big for the email, John.
Yeah, you got to get it through
Skype.
Yeah,
we can do a Dropbox or something, which is still
Skype,
pretty big
for Dropbox. It'll come through Skype. Skype takes.
Well, we can get it to you tomorrow. Let me see what makes sure.
Okay, look, this is what you do. Get that to us. I will talk with Girard about this case tomorrow. I'll get a copy of everything that's in here, and we'll start working on this. And we'll, give us a week, maybe next week, next Monday, we'll talk some more on it, let you know where we're at.
Okay, well, I'll be in Kentucky next week, which some of the charges being up. I'm going to search all the documents, but some of it seems like it's been sent in as a civil charge, and yet they're wanting to try to give him, give him years in prison.
Yeah,
what's
ridiculous.
What was your interest in the case? Why did you get so interested? You know,
I'm a 23-year Marine that I swore an oath to defend against domestic enemies. And I'm sick
so
and
you're,
tired
you're,
of.
Uh-huh.
I'm sick
you're
and
retired,
tired of judges.
You're retired.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yep.
Are you down in Tennessee now?
No, I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
And,
I understand. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so, you mentioned about going after judges. I like what all of you doing, and appreciate you, and I've supported NLA. I sent you money, and I've bought the books, and I've bought some of the supporters. I bought the colloidal silver machine and all this kind of stuff, but I do have a disagreement. I'm afraid we're headed to troubled times. We're not going to pull out, and several other things. But I just see if we don't move to take our country back and remove these judges, start filing charges against them, and this FDA and everybody else that's especially a direct perjury in court. I just don't see us having no hope. There's no remedy unless we force this issue. And the Declaration of Independence, the founders used everything in court to finally get to the point. And they said, well, it's come to this point. Now we're having to declare ourselves sovereign, and we're not going to accept anything you say and do anymore. And so that's one thing I think the Bundys may have come a little bit short of. That they didn't exhaust and didn't get enough support in filing documents to where everything was exhausted. But there again, with all the things that's even been said, it's going against them in Las Vegas at the trial now and stuff. It just makes my, as the saying is, makes my blood boil. And here a guy who's not done any crime whatsoever is deprived from life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness away from his family and everything else, and we're mm-hmm. being ramroded and everything else. We've got to move now. And so,
well, believe me, look, we will move on this case as fast as we can. It takes time to write papers and stuff, but we'll do the best we can to move quickly. We'll look at it tomorrow, and that'll be the next project we'll be working on. You're absolutely right. We got to get after these judges and hold them accountable, and that's what we're doing. Look, we have a list of about 30-plus judges right now, which we're pursuing show causes on, and that's being added to weekly, another five or six judges every week.
Yeah.
And once they start defaulting, we're going out after them, and we're looking to indict, looking to get prosecutors to work with us. But, that's another problem, is getting the prosecutor to work with us on these cases. And that's where the Attorney General comes in and the President, and we've been communicating with them also. So, we're expecting that they're going to step up and do the right thing and obey the law and enforce the law.
Well, that's all well and good, and hopefully they do, but in the meantime, like I said, it seems we need to be filing charges against them and moving a criminal.
Well, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing in the federal case up here in New York. It is going after these people, enemies both foreign and domestic, that are subverting the Constitution, the United States of America, we the people, period. We're going after them. And look, at we may have to wait for critical mass, but I don't think we're far from critical mass. But if the President makes the acknowledgement with this next set of paperwork that we're going filing with him and the courts, and if he kind of gives the nod and moves forward on us, then that will cause critical mass for us. So, we're kind of waiting on him on the one hand to push things forward. He is interested in what we're doing. He does understand what we're doing. You know, it takes a while. You know, we're looking at liberty in its raw, you know, natural form, and people are not used to seeing that kind of liberty, and sometimes it takes a while before they can digest it.
John, I'd like to make a comment about perjury, if I may.
Sure.
And it's a problem, of course, and I used to say that I'd never been involved in a criminal case that the government didn't lie on the witness stand. And I still say that's true. One time I was involved in a case in Oregon, and the U.S. attorney in the case was a civil fellow. He was from Sacramento, and he was of Japanese descent. There are a lot of Japanese people in Sacramento. But we got to talking about perjury, and he said to me, you know, I've never prosecuted perjury, and I don't know anybody that ever has. And I said, well, why not? He said, well, perjury is hard to prove, real hard to prove. It's almost impossible to prove. And that's all he said. Well, years later, I was involved in a case, and I discovered that the popular perception of what perjury is false. Most everybody believes that perjury is lying under oath. It's not. That's not it at all. Perjury is not lying under oath. Perjury is a false oath. Perjury is an oath that is a lie. There's a difference between an oath that is a lie and the lying under oath. And that's hard to prove, that when a person takes the oath and they say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God, it's hard to prove that while they said those very words, they intended to not tell the truth. And so that's why it's hard to prosecute. And I found a case, U.S. Supreme Court, from 1927, might have been 26, and it was a early tax return case. And the question in the case was whether or not the fellow that signed the tax return was prosecutable. And the answer was, as soon as he took the oath, of course, signing the tax return is after swearing, and when you get on the witness stand, that's for swearing, because you're swearing before you testify. On the tax return, you're swearing after you testify under penalties of perjury. And the Supreme Court said this. They said, the crime of perjury is prosecutable upon the taking of the oath. No lying under oath is required. I'm quoting, I believe, just exactly the way they said it. I remember the phrases. It was monumental to me, and I made the argument, by the way, in a case in the Seventh Circuit, that this person could not be prosecuted, or he was falsely prosecuted on appeal, because they were claiming he committed perjury, and perjury is not lying under oath. A lot of people say things under oath that are not true. Some of them by mistake, some inadvertently, some out of fear. They're scared, and they're babbling, and they don't want to know what they're saying. Some people just flat lie under oath. That's true. But the problem is, that's evidence of perjury. That itself is not perjury. And I've discovered that courts don't recognize this or understand the difference. The popular view of what perjury is prevails among the courts, among people, but the law, for centuries, by the way, has said otherwise, and our Supreme Court has recognized that in an early tax return case, and probably other times I didn't find. But to sum it up again, and I do love, and I love it when I find out that what I've always thought is true is not true. I do love it, because I've discovered the truth. And that's the truth about perjury. Lying under oath is a nasty, rotten, even a criminal thing to do, but it's not called perjury. That's another crime entirely. Lying to a police officer, for example. Well, for centuries, that's been a felony. You don't do that. That's why it's important that you not even talk to police officers unless they are torturing you or something, and even then you're taking a big chance. You just don't talk to them. That's why we have the Fifth Amendment. I had somebody call me today and say, well, Sean Hannity, or I don't know how to pronounce his name, I forget, but anyway, he's on Fox News.
Close enough,
close enough for government work, as we used to say. He said, apparently recently, he said that one of his friends is a federal FBI agent, and his FBI friend told him only a fool would talk to an FBI agent. And when they come to your door, you don't talk to them. You certainly don't let them into your house unless they have a warrant or bust down the door. You can't stop them. But you don't consent. That's the point. Back to this is government by the consent of the governed. And we are the governed. As a matter of fact, every person in the country is the governed. Even the President of the United States is under the government of law in our country. And if the FBI came to his house, he'd be a fool to let them in without a warrant, and he'd be just as much of a foolish man to talk to them, talk to any federal law enforcement or any law enforcement officer. They laugh when people start babbling. It makes them giggle because they know they don't have to, even when they trick them into it. Well, that's lying to a government official. That's a felony. Always has been. But perjury is an oath that is taken with full intent to not follow your oath. That's another way to put it. The Bible says that whatever comes out of your mouth, whatever you've sworn to, you'd better make sure it's true and that you do it. And be very careful what you swear to. And be prudent and draw your oath down tightly. Don't just swear to everything. Don't swear generally. Be careful. And when you talk, let your yes be yes and your no be no, because as Jesus Christ said, you go beyond that, you're risking a whole lot. Because anything that you said can and will be used against you. See, the Bible is eminently practical, and it's part. It undergirds our common law tradition, as our common law tradition, just the story of the Supreme Court says, undergirds it. But that's the difference between perjury and lying, and it's an important distinction by all. As well, by the way, in the Bible, throughout, the distinction is made, the law of God, the difference between perjury, and it's called in the Bible, in the old translations, false swearing, swearing falsely. Not lying under oath, but swearing falsely. Back to you, Joan.
So this this is a state witness, and he knew what he was going to testify to and everything, so it wasn't like he was even cross-witnessed by the defense. It was straight from, you know, so how could you not say that he didn't go on the stand intentionally?
I didn't say that.
I'm
saying is it's hard to prove, and prosecutors, I've had local prosecutors tell me this too, and I live in just a small area. But even though you know that they committed perjury, even though you know that their oath was a lie, it's hard to prove. And I've never tried to prove it. I've never been involved in a case where it was where people really did try to prove it. I haven't studied that part of it out. But I do know that that's the reason why government agents get away with lying so much on the witness stand. And boy, do they ever! In the federal courts, the FBI agents, the CIA, they believe they're absolutely untouchable, and they'll still say anything they want. And once they've got their crosshairs on a fellow, like they've got it apparently on this Amishman named Gerard, once they've got their crosshairs on him, they'll do the ends justifies the means, because they believe that they must achieve the result. They're not willing to follow due process and tell the truth and see where the chips fall. They're focused on the result, and that's the problem.
Yeah, but you could go after them, I think, for vindictive prosecution.
That's right, too.
There are a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Malicious prosecution, some people call it.
Yep.
But yeah, it's all there. Anyway, but I don't mean to say that this fella did not commit perjury. I just mean to say that it's hard to prove by a prosecutor, and the judge isn't the prosecutor. There's the other thing. He can turn over the... If he believes there's perjury, turn it over to the prosecutor, but he can't prosecute it. That's separation of powers. That's part of our common law tradition. Our Constitution demands it. So we can't expect the judge to really do anything, except maybe point it out, but even then, he's crossing the line a little bit.
So the judge is not supposed to, cannot say stop the trial and say, he needs to be removed off the witness stand, and that he needs to, I don't know, talk to the prosecution
or something. Look at, here's the thing. to chase this case for that perspective is difficult, and that's the point that that Brent is trying to make here. We would go in this case in a couple of different ways. First of all, a due process problem. Also, violating the sanctity of the jury. You know, I mean, they've tampered with the jury. We can prove that right out of the transcripts that the judge has tampered the jury. And I'm sure when we go through the transcripts, we're going to find a lot of places where the judge is violating his oath of office. And that's where we'll go with the show cause on this. That's how we'll approach it. We'll go after the things we know. Vindictive prosecution, we can go there. And there's a lot of other things we can look at, too. Let us go through the paperwork, and we'll see what's going on here, okay? And let's talk about this maybe next week.
That federal agency has no jurisdiction over that guy. They're just an administrative agency. They have no, what do you call it, I don't want to say standing, but they have no. They really don't have the authority over him. They're pulling him in to a unknown jurisdiction. I mean, I know he talked to them and he tried to do some stuff. Really, what he should have done is never even changed his label and told them to go pound salt or something. You know what I mean? Because the minute you talk to them, like Brent says, now you know it's come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. But it's all fraud. It's all fraud. You know. So, I mean, I know they accept them as the agency that's protecting everybody, but, and I'm sure they got some kind of, somebody got paid off to make a complaint, because they always like to act on a complaint. They want, you know, John Q. Citizen to complain, to empower them to come in and protect the citizens from, you know, something that actually works, basically, is what was happening. He must have had them, it must have worked, because they wouldn't have went after him if it was just really snake oil. They wouldn't have cared, you know. They only chased the good stuff. But anyway, needless to say, like John said, there's a lot of other places you can go in this case. They don't have the jurisdiction. They don't have the authority, you know. They probably didn't even really have a warrant or anything else that's necessary to initiate the case, because they don't think they need it. And so those are the other things that need to be examined in the case. What part of his due process did they actually step on? And they probably stepped on it all the way from the beginning right through till then, you know? And those are blatant, usually.
All right. With that, we're going to end our program. It's a couple of minutes to midnight, so we got quite a few people left in the queue. Apologize we can't get to you tonight. And Lord willing, we'll catch you next week. So thanks, everyone, for coming. And again, see you next week. Thanks. God bless.
Gerard.